you know, Perryville's got big guys in the middle, but, you know, when you run the option game, you read those guys. You don't really have to block them a lot of times. So, you know, our guys really knew what they were doing Friday night. You could tell it was different. You know, we knew where Perryville was going to line up, and you know, it just makes it easier for our guys to get their reads, and they did a good job executing.
I know not that you doubted them, really, but from the off season all the way until the beginning of the year, there were a lot of question marks on your offensive line with 4 out of the 5 starters leaving due to graduation last year. And I feel like from the beginning of the year till now, they've gotten far better from where they were early on.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that going into the season, we thought it was probably going to be a weakness of our football team, but right now it's probably our strength. So, you know, I give a lot of credit to the coaching staff getting them ready, but also to the kids. You know, they've really responded, and it really makes us pretty confident moving forward because, you know, coming into the season, we thought we were going to be pretty good if our offensive line would shake out, and now for me to say that it's kind of our strength, I think that bodes well for us moving forward.
So that is week 7 throughout the listening area in high school football, and when we return on the backside of this break, we'll dive a little bit more in depth with some of the games that we called, starting with the KJF game where the DeSoto Dragons upset the Hillsboro Hawks by a final score of 14-8. Back after this on the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington.
Make it a great family night at Applebee's Bar and Grill in Farmington. Hi, my name is Amy Cousins, general manager of your local store. Maybe start out with a couple of appetizers, boneless wings, onion rings, mozzarella sticks, spinach artichoke dip, chicken quesadilla. There's so much to choose from. Let the kids pick from the kids menu, then for yourself, choose one of our favorites. Steaks, ribs, seafood, pasta, we have it all. Go to Applebee's.com for the full menu and look for our happy hour prices. Doing good in the neighborhood, Applebee's Bar and Grill in Farmington.
When it's all said and done, what really matters? For Serenity Hospice Care patient Jack, hospice isn't about giving up. It's not about the end. It's about right now. It's about spending precious time with the people we love.
Come on, Grandpa!
And the little moments that create lasting memories. It's focusing on what's important to you and remembering. Life is beautiful in all stages.
Have you ever been to dinner with a friend and realized you don't have cash to split the check? Or do you need to pay the soccer coach for that new uniform? Hi, Paul Hale from New Era Bank, and our new app has just what you need. Our app features person-to-person payments. This allows you to pay from your cell phone directly to someone else's. They receive a text from you and get the money real-time, even if you don't bank with us. Check out our website at www.newerabank.com for more information, or call one of our locations. Member FDIC.
This is Myrna from the YMCA. Parents, mark your calendars. Kids Night Out at the Y will be Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 10. Kids ages 5 to 12 are invited to the Jefferson County Y for a safe, supervised evening of fun. Parents, you get the evening off to relax. Kids can swim, play in the gym, make Halloween masks, and enjoy many other activities. $12 for members and $17 per non-member. Registration closes at noon on Friday, October 19th. Register by calling 636-931-9622 today.
Hey, it's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable on J98 The Roost, where it is buy one, get one boneless here at Buffalo Wild Wings, as it is throughout the football season. And well, they got a new initiative going on, Team Up for Kids, where you can donate today. You donate $1, you get a pinup, and you donate $5, and you'll get one of those pop stickers that goes on the back of a cell phone. Something like that, so you can hold it, you can prop it up as well. All the proceeds will go to the Boys and Girls Club of America. It is a Team Up for Kids, teaming up with Buffalo Wild Wings. So the KJF game, Matt, you had a DeSoto upsetting Hillsboro in a close one, 14-8 final score.
Yeah, man, that was that was bonkers is the word I used on Sports Talk earlier today. That was just one of those games where you kind of knew that finish was coming. When it's an 8-6 ball game, with a minute 10 to go in the fourth quarter, it's going to come down to some sort of big play, some awesome thing happening. And for DeSoto, fortunately for them, they were on the end of the awesome thing. And, you know, Clayton Snudden had sort of a tough game catching a couple of clean balls early in the first half, which could have given DeSoto a little separation early on. And for him to come back and create separation off the defender to make the eventual game-winning catch, and then the defense – The defensive line, I'll give shout-outs now. Dalton Melton and Wyatt Moser were just phenomenal, the two D-tackles there. They just did a great job. And, yeah, man, it was just a great football game and a huge victory. I mean, we're talking huge on a big scale for the DeSoto Dragons.
And you mentioned, you know, big plays at the end of the game. A game like that, when it's that close, it's going to come down to playmakers. Who really steps up when their team needs them to?
Yeah, certainly. And I will say this, I think Coach Johnson will agree, it wasn't the best game from quarterback Briar Fisher, but the thing about the DeSoto offense is they're going to throw the football, and that's their identity, and they're going to stick to it no matter what. And for Coach to have faith in Briar Fisher that he's going to eventually find his rhythm and be able to use him late to get that game-winning touchdown shows me that DeSoto is ready to take that next step with Briar Fisher as our quarterback. And he did a great job getting the ball to Clayton Snutton, as you'll hear in a little bit. And, just a great victory for the Dragons.
So it was mayhem in DeSoto Friday night on KGF as, once again, the Dragons held off Hillsborough in the waning seconds to secure the 14-8 victory. It appeared the Hawks would take the lead in the first quarter when Hayden Voyle scored on this 91-yard carry.
Handoff, Hayden Voyle slips a tackle, 15, 20, he's off to the races, 30, 35, 40, midfield, one man to beat. And Harmon will not catch up to Voyles as he crosses the five and scores the first touchdown of the night.
But an unusual penalty was called on the Hawks, and the long touchdown run was taken off the board. Matt, what was the penalty then?
Oh, man, it's going to hurt your heart when you hear it, too. So as Voyles is running down the field, the coaching staff for Hillsborough was trying to run down with him in excitement and all that good stuff. Well, the official has to have the sideline, and they were within the restricted section. And one of the officials, the far sideline official, wound up running into one of the coaches, which, according to rule, means the play is dead from that spot. And so they had to bring it all the way back to about the 26, 30-yard line or so.
I imagine Coach Freeman was not thrilled with, probably knowing him, the officials and the coaching staff, or whichever coach was the one that got called for that penalty.
And, of course, you know, he's not going to say names, and no. I totally get that and respect that. But, yeah, it's just one of those moments where and what had happened is DeSoto had just turned it over on downs on that previous possession. So they turn it over on downs, and then Voyles runs it 91 yards in the very next play. And for that to be called back, it was a blessing. It was not in disguise, but it was a blessing for sure for DeSoto.
So following that penalty, still scoreless, it would remain that way through the first quarter. In the second quarter we go, where DeSoto's Cole Watson, he'd score the first points of the game with a 5-yard carry.
Out of the backfield, Watson takes a handoff. Nobody accounted for him, and he is into the end zone. So a 5-yard touchdown run straight up the middle by Cole Watson. Now DeSoto leads it 6-0.
The extra point wound up being blocked there and kept the score at 6-0, and that's the lead DeSoto would take into halftime. Was it kind of bend but don't break defensive style the rest of the game, or was it very, you know, just interlocked in the middle of the field for the most part?
No, it was just, both teams, strong D-line for DeSoto, a good secondary for Hillsborough, slowing down the pass attack, and DeSoto's D-lineman slowing down the rush attack. No, it was just a great, you know, nose-to-nose type football game.
Meanwhile, the third quarter involved a pair of DeSoto turnovers, both of which were interceptions and one Hillsborough fumble that the Dragons recovered. With the Hawks down 6-0 early in the fourth, a 15-play drive was capped off with a Tyler Sizemore 1-yard touchdown run.
Eckrich takes the snap, hands it off, and upended as he crosses the goal line is Tyler Sizemore. Touchdown number 4 for Tyler Sizemore in 2018.
And then the Hawks, as they always do, they went for two.
Dace takes the carry, cuts it back towards the inside, turns his back into the defender, and pushes off of him, crossing the goal line for two, and Hillsborough takes a late lead.
Now, that two-point conversion being successful will play a big factor later on in this game, but at this point, the Hillsborough Hawks, you know, it gave them the lead as well, which is, you know, something that's always risky for them, that they never go for one, even in a situation like this where it's a defensive battle and it's a tie game. They still go for two. They stick to their guns.
Yeah, they certainly do. And you know what? Whatever. They get it done for the most part, and they did it there. And, you know, with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you know, here they are. It's now who's going to make the big plays as we come down to the end.
So both teams, they continue to slug it out with a minute and a half to play. And DeSoto's Briar Fisher, he found senior wide receiver Clayton Snudden for the go-ahead score.
Soto with a two-point deficit launches it up. Oh. Snudden breaks free, catches it at the 10.
What a play.
And he's into the end zone for the score.
What a play.
Four-yard touchdown completion to Clayton Snudden. DeSoto on top, 12-8.
There we go. This is where the big implications would come from. The way the math works out now, even if DeSoto went for one, if Hillsborough scores another touchdown, they take the lead in this game then. So they had to go for two in this situation, and here's that two-point conversion.
Three receiver set. Fisher takes the high snap, rolls to the right, stops on the dime, launches it up towards the back of the end zone, going up for grabs.
Got it.
And Andrew Downs has it. For the two, 14-8, DeSoto with 1:10 to play here in quarter number four.
So at 14-8, DeSoto, that would give them the lead in this game. And this was a home game for DeSoto, correct?
It took
place in DeSoto. So what was the vibe like in the stands after that?
You could hear it. I mean, I could barely put two thoughts together. I had to pull the mic away from my mouth as far as it could go. I had to shout above the crowd because if I would have gone regular voice, I would have been totally drowned out. It was madness there. It was incredible. If I wasn't talking and had a chance to just be in the crowd and experience it, I think I would have probably gotten goosebumps.
So at 14-8, DeSoto, Hillsborough gave it one final go with no timeouts and a third and goal with 13 seconds left.
Third down and goal from the four. Tight end Weber on the left side of the line under center. Eckridge off to his right. Boyles takes a snap, rolls to the right,
exactly.
And men in the backfield, and guess who? Dalton Milton with the sack. Time ticking, 2 seconds, 1 second. This is over. Mayhem in DeSoto.
So there you go. That is it. And the DeSoto Dragons pulled off the upset for the first time in how many years was it, Matt?
Since 2010, they have not beaten Hillsborough. That's 11 games. The last 2 years, DeSoto and Hillsborough have played in the regular season and in the first round of the district tournament. Hillsborough's won both those matchups in the district tournament as well. So, yeah, 11 straight defeats for DeSoto. And Clayton Snudden talking to him afterwards, I mean, all smiles from ear to ear. You could, and then the celebration right after the final seconds tick off, you could really tell how much this meant to not just the players and coaches, but the community as well.
So Snudden, he actually says it felt amazing to make the go-ahead catch at the end of the game.
Absolutely. I've been dreaming about this for my entire life. So, I mean, it's definitely up there for one of the best things I've ever felt.
Well, and see, you get these players, these kids that grow up in these communities, and they you know, from they're born in them, they're raised up in them. They see maybe an uncle or, you know, whoever get involved in these rivalry games, and then they get a chance to step on the field and face a team that, you know, historically has been much better than them on the football field. And for them, for Clayton Sutton to be able to make that go-ahead catch and for Dalton Melton to sack the quarterback as time expires, those two kids will never forget those moments.
I mean, that's something that is going to replay in his mind for years from now, and he's probably going to tell his kids and his kids about it as well.
That's what's great about it.
The win for DeSoto, it ends, as we were talking about, an 11-game drought against Hillsborough. Both DeSoto and the Hawks now sit at 4-3 on the season. Hillsborough heads to 7-0 Jackson on this Friday. DeSoto is going to be on the road at 5-2 St. Genevieve for the Coles Tractor and Equipment Web TV game. Matt, final thoughts on this game?
I mean, the players left it out on the field. The fans were in full stock. They were expecting a really good ball game, and they got probably more than what they imagined. And to be able to, for us to be a part of that, I think is really cool as well, for us to be able to call the game and be there and witness that moment and the water coolers being poured on the coaches. Wyatt Moser, actually, funny story, while Dave Cook and I were wrapping up our post-game show, Wyatt Moser was on the sideline for DeSoto. He took a Gatorade bath. Like, he was the one that doused himself with the water, and you just see all this ice and water come right down on top of him. And because it was hot and muggy the entire night. But, yeah, so like I said, it's just folks expected a great game. It was one of the more evenly matched up matches between these two teams in recent memory. And so just good feels all around for the DeSoto community.
probably the best game that we're going to see all season between them, all of us. I mean, it doesn't get much better than a late, you know, final 2 minutes, go ahead, score in a rivalry game like that.
Yeah, and because of the rivalry factor, I believe I could hop on board with that statement for sure.
So once again, the final score, it is DeSoto upsetting Hillsborough 14-8. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll break down the KRI game, the Farmington Knights. They keep it rolling in the SEMO North, topping Sykeston 24-6. It's the Coles Tractor Equipment Football Roundtable from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington on J98.
Make your backyard a paradise for your whole family. You can do it with a swimming pool. Hi, I'm Angie DeClue with Home Pools and Spas. We can make your vacation destination right outside your back door. Above ground or in ground, you have a choice of selections. Install now for years of great times.
Everybody's going home, pool and spa.
To see pools and pricing, go to our website, homepoolsandspas.net. Again, I'm Angie DeClue, owner of Home Pools and Spas, inviting you to stop by. We're located just south of the Ludington exit.
If you have water or fire damage in your home or business, call Bryant Restoration at 986-3260. Hi, I'm Reggie Aubuchon, owner of Bryant Restoration. At Bryant Restoration, we strive to provide an efficient, transparent experience to help take the stress out of your situation. Bryant Restoration is IICRC certified, and we work with all insurance companies. Locally owned and operated, we have locations in St. Francis County and Poplar Bluff, covering all of Southeast Missouri. We'd like to wish all local high school athletes good luck this season. Bryant Restoration, online at bryantrestorationco.com.
There are lots of things to love about the 2018 Toyota RAV4. Just ask the people who bought one, but be prepared to get an earful. They might mention its versatile build and flexible cargo space. They'll probably rave about its available heated front seats, sport-tuned suspension, and all-wheel drive with dynamic torque control. But the one thing they absolutely won't stop talking about comes standard, the RAV4's suite of advanced safety features, which includes a pre-collision system with pedestrian detection and lane departure alert with steering assist. It's a brilliant bit of technology that helps you respond to changing road conditions. It helps keep you safe without sacrificing performance, and it doesn't cost anything extra. You love it already, don't you? Tested, trusted, Toyota. Toyota, let's go places.
Lane departure alert and pre-collision systems are not a substitute for safe and attentive driving practices.
See Twin City Toyota, I-55 at the Herculaneum Auto Mall exit. Don't think twice. Think Twin City.
It's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington on a J98. The Boot is Chad Speaker rejoins us to take a look at the Farmington Knights. Another good victory for them, Chad. 24-6 over Sykeston. With all the injuries that Farmington has had, the fact that they're able to still keep going and playing some strong football like this has been really impressive.
Yeah, and, you know, they might not have a lot more injuries than maybe other teams, but, you know, very significant. I mean, starting quarterback, maybe your best two-way player in Tyson Gray, so some very key injuries for that team, but they have managed to push forward, and they did get Sutton back to play linebacker and doing a little bit better there. Gray, they're hoping to get back before the end of the year, but you know, he was still in a boot and on crutches last game. So definitely not at full power, but a really nice win for them. So they have a winning record. You know, we'll get through and talk about a lot of that, but first winning record in the SEMO North since 2011. So really a key victory for them on Friday.
And like I mentioned earlier on in the program, a good milestone for Farmington too. They seem to find a different milestone each year. I think last year was the first time they had a playoff win in a number of years. The year before that, I think it was the first time they had a winning season in a number of years as well.
Yeah, it was 2 years back they had that playoff win. They got to the, district championship in 2015, but that was part of that progression.
So the Farmington Knights, they beat Sykeston 24-6 in a game with several ramifications. The Knights finished the SEMO North play at 3-1, their first winning record in conference since 2011. Farmington also holds on to the number 2 seed in Class 4 District 1 rankings and helped their fans have a happy homecoming as well. With everyone expecting Royce Harris to run the ball on Farmington's first drive, the Knights executed the unexpected.
Coach Krupe said they want to use the running game to set up their passing game this week. We'll see, as Royce Harris wants to throw the football, and he does, and it's complete to Lamb. Eli breaks a tackle to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, halfback pass. Royce Harris to Eli Lamb for 37 yards. Razzle dazzle means 6 for the Black Knights.
It's one of those Coach Schweiss plays right there. You always have a number of those good ones. But, you know, the weird thing, too, is, like,
you think, okay, Royce Harris, so when he gets that pitch, I mean, his wide receiver is going to be completely alone, right? Well, he actually wasn't. There were two defenders there, and Harris actually had to throw a really good ball to Lamb, and Lamb had to break a tackle and did a nice job kind of stiff-arming his way to the end zone. But it was a good play all in all.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, that type of trick play that you guys will pull out every once in a while, something like that. How much time do you spend in practice scheming something like that up before you pull it out in-game? Is it just a week of type of deal, or is it something you tease a little bit during the off-season workouts and then you pull back out later on in the season?
Well, we don't run any trick plays. I mean, we don't do any of that stuff.
You're definitely not sarcastic.
They're not. I mean, they're not trick plays. That's just part of the offense. I mean, they're not supposed to trick anybody.
Andy Reid over here.
Just out-execute them, right?
That's right.
So the BAT made it 7-0 Knights. Both teams, they traded possessions until the second quarter when Harris made another incredible play for the Knights.
In this alignment, motion man is Harris, and the give is to Royce Harris. Harris trying to break one man. He's to the 20, to the 30. Stiff arms a guy to the 40. Royce Harris to midfield. There's no way they're going to catch him. Royce Harris turns on the Jets, and all that's left is a vapor trail. Royce Harris for 87 yards. Touchdown, Knights.
Harris would actually go for 214 on 20 carries and a 37-yard touchdown pass, which is the only completion of the game for the Knights. But, Chad, this guy is just an electric playmaker for Farmington, always finding a way to make the play when the Knights need it.
He's got a spectacular highlight every week, you know, whether it's special teams or, heck, he threw a touchdown pass week number one. He ventured over and took a ball away from a receiver that the ball was intended for another guy, and he swoops in and catches that for a touchdown. He's always doing something on the football field that kind of makes you drop your jaw. And this 87-yard run was another one. You know, he didn't just get to the corner. He broke a tackle. He stiff-armed a guy. And then once he got out there, you're not going to catch him from behind.
Does he play on the defensive side at all or just offense special teams?
Occasionally.
Defense. Where do they put him in on defense?
At safety.
I was going to say, I feel like he'd make a great, like, cover one, cover three, center field free safety. You've talked about the ball skills, how he went up for a pass earlier this year on a receiving touchdown, took it away, and his acceleration, too. I feel like you combine those two and then get him downhill running going the other way if he does pick it off. I mean, that could be like an Ed Reed type of safety.
And I think, you know, Ed Reed, like you're talking about, a big hitter. And, you know, I think if you just label Harris as a speed guy, I think you're mislabeling him because he takes on tacklers. I mean, he'll hit you. So he's only like 5'7", but, man, he's a ball of muscle.
So the Knights, they took the second down the field and set up a Cale Krause for his third field goal make of the year.
And the snap is good. The hold is down, and Krause's kick is away and clear,
good.
And it's through. Very nice kick by Cale Krause, a 37-yard field goal for Farmington on the first drive of the second half.
That could be a big X factor for the Knights heading down later on in the season, especially in their district when you have a team like a Hillsborough that always goes for two. That addition of having a kicking game could be the difference between a win and a loss.
I think at the high school level it is. I mean, it's a difference maker. It gives you a weapon. If you get to the 20, you're not put in a box, you know, where you always have to go for it. This is a guy that can hit. Now, he hasn't hit from 40 yet. He's hit from the 30s, but Farmington actually had a penalty on Sykeston after their touchdown one time, so that moved the kickoff up 15 yards, and he knocked it wide left, but he actually had the distance to put it through the uprights.
And Coach White, that Potosi game, you talked to me about it heading into the week, where you got deep into enemy territory a couple times. You wound up falling by just one point, but that not having a kicking game with Bridges being out that game really hurt you guys.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, you know, with Bridges, we feel like he's just said, you get to the 20, you're definitely in the scoring range. I think he made the 43-yarder this year. He's made a 52 already in practice. He's, you know, he's a really good kicker. And the thing about in high school football that people don't realize is if you try to kick a field goal and you just get it in the end zone, it's a touchback. So, I mean, if you're going to punt, I mean, you could try a 55-yard field goal. It's no different than punting the ball, you know, if you punt in the end zone. So, you know, I think this year we'll probably attempt some long field goals if we get in a situation where, I mean, I think the one game we attempted a 48-yarder or whatever, and he was just missed it by a little bit. Actually, I think he hit the upright or something up at MICDS.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So anyway, I mean, we're going to probably attempt some long field goals. We had those opportunities in the Potosi game, and obviously he wasn't there. But, you know, we haven't really had those opportunities in our other games. quite yet.
Now, before we get back to the Farmington game, just to get some clarification on that rule, if you catch it in the end zone on a kickoff, it's a touchback. But on the field goal attempt, if you catch it in the end zone, is it still a touchback?
Yes. Okay. As long as it crosses the line.
Okay.
It basically, they treat the front of the end zone like out of bounds almost.
Gotcha. Because the only thing you'd worry about then, if that wasn't the rule, is the kicking team not knowing to fan out as soon as it's kicked, just in case he sends one back to try and return
it. Yeah, if they would catch it at the one, they'd be able to return it. But if it goes across the goal line, it's a touchback.
That's what was it, the kick Bama kick play with Auburn.
Bama. Yeah,
the reason he was able to score that touchdown is because the field goal unit doesn't know, like a punting unit, as soon as it's away, just fan out, so that way he can't get a lane to run through.
Yeah, and usually you have big guys on your extra point team.
Exactly.
So you don't want those guys to have to cover. Like
you don't have gunners down the sideline, and most teams don't have a left tackle that was a former running back like you guys do. At least as well, so most teams wouldn't be able to be in a good position with that. So the extra point, no good, keeping it at 13-0 as the second quarter began. Or excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong game right now. The Bulldogs, they notched their only score on the next possession, doing a 65 yards in 8 plays.
Twins to each side, Quickendall the single setback. We know Rolling can be a good runner as well. He fakes it. Quickendall rolls to his right side, looks to the end zone, and the pass is complete. Great catch. And that's making the reception right there was Daniel Lawrence on a perfect throw by Gage Rolling for 16 yards. Touchdown, Sykeston.
Good play. Best drive of the game for Sykeston. They didn't do much more, though, the rest of the way.
I mean, usually the best drive is one that you did score on, but 17-6 would make the score there after another failed extra point. Then late in the fourth quarter, Farmington extended the lead with quarterback Caden Files sneaking it in.
Yost, the fullback, and he's just going to push Files from behind on the quarterback sneak, and Caden gets into the end zone. A 2-yard touchdown run by Caden Files. Touchdown Knights, and Farmington leads now 23-6 at the 4:21 mark.
How has Caden Files been doing, taking over as the starting quarterback?
He's been a caretaker, you know. I mean, but that's what they asked their quarterback to do in this system. They have an option system, and you know, Caden doesn't throw the ball a whole lot. He occasionally pitches it in that third phase of that option, but he's been a good, tough kid and a reliable quarterback for him. He's just a sophomore. He's going to be good.
I mean, I feel like a game manager, that's what the Farmington Knights really need out of a quarterback like that when he comes in, you know, as a sophomore especially, is, you know, don't try to do too much. Don't try to win us every single game, especially with an option attack.
Royce Harris to hand the ball off to.
Exactly.
You know
that makes
I mean?
It so much easier. Extra point good, giving the Farmington Knights a 24-6 lead, and that'd be the final margin of victory. So another good win for the Farmington Knights as the defense held Sykeston to -7 yards rushing at the half and only 13 total for the game. So some good rushing defense for Farmington. They've got a tough rushing opponent coming up in this coming week.
Yeah,
a bit tougher than Sykeston.
They would do. But Sykeston is a good power team. And probably that was probably among the top three defensive performances that I've seen out of Farmington in the years that I've been calling their action.
As I mentioned, the defense held Sykeston to 13 yards on the game. They sacked the quarterback, Gage Rolling, 6 times and held him to -56 yards on 13 carries. Rolling gained 100 yards last year on 9 carries when he played as a running back against Farmington. Sykeston falls to 3-4. They host New Madrid County Central next week. 5-2 Farmington. They're at home, taking on 4-3 Lutheran North. The Crusaders ranked 4th in all of Class 2, so another tough opponent. I mean, they just faced a ranked opponent 2 weeks ago in Jackson. They've got another one in Lutheran North coming up around the corner now.
Yeah, Lutheran. And we'll talk a little bit more about Lutheran North. They're a Class 2 team, but, you know, let's be real. They're a St. Louis City team. They're a private school, so they've got tremendous athletes. Their schedule is crazy. They've played a couple of Chicago teams. They played a Class 8 team out of Chicago, Homewood Flossmoor, that made the Class 8 playoffs in Illinois last year. They went up to Cincinnati and played a team. So, you know, they have a nutso schedule. Those were their 3 losses. But once they arrived back into Missouri, they've been rolling, folks.
This is something we talked about earlier, not really on the air, but at Farmington, I know, is looking at a couple out-of-state teams to potentially play to fill the non-conference, non-district parts of the schedule. But, Coach Schweiss, do you know how that translates over with the district standings if you were to play a team from a different state?
Actually, I don't even know. Like, if you say Class 8, I know you get points for playing up, but I don't know how that translates. I'd have to, you know, it would be one of those things I'd probably have to look up. I know Kennett has played a team from Arkansas, I think, this year, I don't really know how.
Marion, I think, maybe.
Yeah, I don't really know how that translates. I haven't really looked into it. I just try to take care of what we do, you know.
I was just curious, maybe you knew from potentially building a schedule into the year, if you knew if you went across the Mississippi, played a team in Illinois, you knew it was worth this much more or this much less or something like that.
Yeah, I'd
ask.
I have no idea.
All right. So, once again, final score, it is the Farmington Knights topping Sykeston 24-6. Final thoughts on this game, Chad?
Well, you know, pivotal win for the Knights. They've got another big matchup with Lutheran North. And then, you know, I'm going to look forward to week number 9. I get to go over to Central and call that game between Farmington and Central. It's such a fun game. I wish they did it every year. The communities get all excited, and both programs are in good shape. So I always have really a blast calling that one.
Yeah, I think that's probably a game that's probably going to stay on there now. I think, you know, it was one of those games that got off the schedule years ago when we were down. But now that we're having a pretty successful program, I think that game's probably on the schedule to stay. I wouldn't see any reason why it's going to get off. And I was telling Chad earlier, Coach Krupe and our coaching staff and Coach Krupe, we get along really well. So there's no reason for us not to play each other.
There's a good mutual respect. Yeah.
That, and I know you always like to schedule either a team of class up or a tough team in the last week of the season to get your team ready to go for the playoffs as well. And with the success Farmington's been having, getting better and better each year, I mean, no reason not to keep that on the schedule just for that reason at all, let alone the locality and the relationship with Coach Krupe.
Yeah, and, you know, we played them here not the last cycle but the cycle before, and that whole thing was kind of weird how that fell apart for 2 years. I don't know if basically what happened was Pat Burns was the AD at Farmington, I think, and he took a job up in St. Louis as an athletic director, and then he was building a schedule for the team, for the school that he was going to, and in doing that, he was still building a schedule for Farmington. Well, the team that he was going to had an open week 9, so he was basically building two schedules and killed two birds with one stone by scheduling Farmington week 9.
He made his job easier.
Left a note for Coach Bacon to tell him to call Central and tell him that they weren't playing us anymore. So, and that happened before we even played Farmington in the second year, back when we played them, whenever that was, 3 or 4 years ago.
And you guys split those pair of games.
Yeah,
that
and it was
fun.
And it was
they
good.
Were both good games.
Yeah, they were fun games, and the second game was a real good game over. I mean, it wasn't fun to lose, but it was a good game, you know.
Exciting game from the outside looking in.
Very exciting game. So and that's the thing, man. These guys, you know, the players, they always want to win. Coaches always want to win. But, you know, the fans just like to watch good games. You know, nobody wants to go watch a running clock game. That's not that much fun to go watch. So, anyway, good football. Anytime it's a competitive game, that's usually what the fans want to see.
Well, plus the players kind of know each other. There's kind of that added element, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, like Will, for example, he went to grade school Farmington, and Tyson Gray went to school at Central. So, like, you know, the kids know each other, you know. So.
And so, once again, it was the final score, Farmington topping Sykeston 24-6. Coach Weiss mentioned a running clock game. Sometimes you get those, and, well, that'll be the game we're breaking now next. It's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Web TV game where St. Genevieve topped Fredericktown 54-17. Back after this on the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable on J98.
When life changes, where can you get the health care that you or your loved one needs? Try Presbyterian Manor, where we consider you family. Being a member of our family means having a skilled, compassionate team making sure you live your best life. Call 573-756-6768 today and schedule a visit to see why the community voted us the best independent living, best assisted living, and best skilled nursing community in the Parkland area.
Coles Tractor and Equipment continues to be the leader of compact tractor sales for St. Francis and surrounding counties. How, you ask? It's simple. By selling the best quality for the best price with a proven best warranty on the market. Hi, it's Hannah with LS, the major brand maker of two other brands. Brands that you already know and love. At Coles Tractor and Equipment, you get that same franchise quality with the best 6-year parts and labor warranty and more standard features than I can name in this 60-second ad. This month, get the 35-horsepower, 4-wheel drive diesel tractor with loader and skid steer front bucket for only $16,999. That's right, get the 35-horsepower compact diesel tractor with loader for only $16,999. Give us a call today, 573-756-4353, or stop by Coles Tractor and Equipment, 1 mile east of Farmington on Highway 32. Coles Tractor and Equipment. Don't just follow the herd, lead the herd.
Investing in a degree or a certificate from Mineral Area College can pay you dividends. It's why we've been serving the surrounding community since 1922. Studies consistently show people who get an education after high school still earn a lot more in their lifetime. Show yourself you care. Invest in your education. Check MAC out at mineralarea.edu or call us at 573-431-4593, because MAC is your next step.
It's the Colts Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable on a J98. The Boot, Sean Malone now joined by Nick Lewis, who had coverage of the Colts Tractor and Equipment Web TV game. St. Genevieve, Missouri, where the Dragons, they took down the Fredericktown Blackcats 54-17. So a good showing on offense from St. Genevieve, a team that's struggled throughout the season so far to get some consistency with their offense.
Yeah, and we talked to Coach Weick about that a little bit. He said that, you know, the passing game has been working pretty well. It's been a little bit of a struggle at times to get the running game going, but as you're going to find out, every aspect of the game was working for St. Gen on this night.
Yeah, they routed Fredericktown at home on Friday night by a final score of 54-17 in front of a lively crowd. The Dragons, they were first on the scoreboard with their sophomore running back Darian Brown breaking loose midway through the first quarter.
6:25 on the clock, first and 10 from the 26. Dunsey this time does hand it off to his running back. Up the middle he goes. He's got a big hole. He's going to break a few tackles. Going into the end zone, untouched for a touchdown is Darian Brown. That is a touchdown for St. Genevieve. And the Dragons strike first.
Darian Brown missed a couple games earlier this season. Good to see him getting back into the flow, because it's only a sophomore, but even last year he made an impact in a number of games. He's going to be a talented player for the next few years.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that he's only a sophomore, because when he is healthy, he's kind of the bell cow for that team. You don't really see a lot of other running backs. You do see the quarterback Dunsey run the football quite a bit, but as far as running backs, it's kind of just him as long as he's healthy.
And Dunsey running a bit. Logan Gegg will run it quite a bit as well.
Yes, him too.
St. Gen going with that rare two-quarterback system.
Yeah, Gegg kind of comes in for, you know, some wildcat looks, some jumbo looks, and we saw that a lot in that game as well.
He'll also lead block quite a bit. I recall in the game actually against Central, they would direct snap it to Darian Brown, and Logan Gegg would loop in front, and he'd be lead blocking for Brown instead.
Yeah, you know, Coach Weick has called him a little bit overlooked at times. He's a junior, but he's really looked up to by his teammates. They really look at him as a leader. And, you know, Gegg, a lot of times when they got down to the goal line, they would give it to him and take Dunsey completely out of the game just because they liked their formation that they had with that jumbo set when they got that close.
So with that touchdown and the extra point, St. Gen would take a 7-0 lead. They quickly added to that lead with quarterback Chad Dunsey taking matters into his own hands.
First and goal from the 8. Dunsey back there with his offense. Dunsey is going to take it himself. Up the middle he goes, and Dunsey is into the end zone for a touchdown. This time, Chad Dunsey does it himself. The 6'1 senior on his senior night takes it up the middle for a touchdown, and it's 13-0 Dragons.
Interesting note, I should say, about the senior night. They actually have a home game coming up this weekend that we're covering, but just because of the order of things that they're doing it in, homecoming comes after senior night. So just a kind of interesting note there.
Did they give you a reason why? Because normally teams will do the last regular season home game is senior night.
I think whatever school is close to them is having their senior night next week.
Valley Catholic,
thank you.
This week. Valley was having their homecoming this week, so they didn't want to have the homecoming on the same
week
as well.
They didn't want to compete with each other.
Yeah, that's it.
Especially because that's a very tight community as well. They didn't want to be really fighting each other fans and the community.
Yeah, they never want to have their homecomings on the same night.
I'm surprised. Do you know if they ever try to coordinate their schedules where both teams, it's one at home and one on the road or something like that?
I don't think they really coordinate them that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they try it. I mean, it's nice when it is like that, but most of the St. Gen fans, they go to the St. Gen games no matter what, and the Valley fans go to the Valley games.
Gotcha.
Unless it's like really far out, you know, then they might go to the other team, but for the most part, it's their fans go to their games.
Gotcha. But at least for the community as a whole, then, it is cool that they have back-to-back homecoming weeks then.
Yep, it's fun.
So with the extra point no good this time, it kept it at 13-0. And as the second quarter began, the Dragons, they found the end zone again, this time with Dunsey throwing downfield to Brittany Boyer for the play of the game.
Dunsey takes the snap. Fake handoff to Brown. Dunsey rolling out left. Looking to the left end zone and caught for a touchdown. It's Brady Boyer continuing on his route. He went from one side of the end zone till the other, all the way near the left pylon. And a touchdown catch this time for Boyer.
So it sounds like this was a goal line play. Did they just have Boyer kind of going along the back of the end zone running parallel to Dunsey?
So what happened was it was fourth and goal from about the 10-yard line, and St. Jen decided to go for it. And Dunsey's offensive line gave him all day to throw. So Boyer, as you know, you kind of have to improvise as the play goes on and the route has already been kind of done. He just runs from the right side of the end zone all the way to the left side, keeps going on his route, and eventually pops open, and Dunsey finds him for a touchdown. It was an amazing play.
And that would give St. Jenna a 20-0 lead, this time with a point after good. Fredericktown, they responded later in the second with a short field goal, but could not stop the onslaught from St. Genevieve as the Dragons would go on to extend the lead to 40-3 at the half. And on that note, a running clock took over for the entirety of the second half, taking us eventually to a 54-17 final in this one. So it looks like Fredericktown was able to get a little bit going in the second half, but just too little too late for them.
Yeah, and, you know, St. Jen had kind of backed off a little bit defensively. You know, they were giving them some underneath stuff and not, you know, not necessarily trying as hard to make the stops. They had made some substitutions and whatnot. And, you know, it started out early for Fredericktown. They had three and outs in the first half just to begin things. And, you know, when they got that field goal, they were actually at the 2-yard line on second and goal, and they just couldn't punch it in, and they had to settle. And after that, you really felt, you know, a lot of wind come out of their sails because it felt like they were building up to a possible comeback. Unfortunately, for them, it didn't come to fruition.
This is a tough matchup for Fredericktown as well. St. Jen's been looking pretty good on defense this season. You know, we talked a bit about Valley Catholic before. They held them to just one score back in week two of the season. And Fredericktown's really struggled to get some consistency on offense this year, getting a lot of their points really from their special teams at times.
No doubt about it. Fredericktown starts four sophomores on the offensive line along with one senior. So anytime you have that much youth, and then, of course, your running back is a sophomore as well, there's going to be some growing pains. And, you know, they've got a lot of seniors, but they play so many sophomores as well that, you know, with Coach Ford being in his second year, he's trying to change the culture. He's got plenty of time still left. And I like what I'm seeing from him in his second year. It just takes time.
So once again, final score 54-17. After the victory, head coach of the Dragons, Ken Weick, thought it was a complete performance from his team.
Couldn't be happier with their effort. It was from the beginning, you know, and we had a good week of practice, and we talked about that. We came in and had fun at practice and had some, you know, some late practices, and guys were coming away smiling. You know, usually when you walk out of practice, you're kind of dragging a little bit this time of year, but they were walking out smiling. They came in the night in a good mood, and they're definitely ending the night in a good mood.
Meanwhile, on the opposite sideline, Fredericktown head coach Chuck Ford, he didn't think his team was ready to play.
I don't think we were ready to play. Played scared. We played. We didn't do anything we'd worked on all week in practice.
It's interesting because with Coach Ford saying his team wasn't ready to play, that's something he's actually praised his team for a number of times throughout the year. Even when they've taken a loss, no matter how tough it is, he's praised them a number of times for continuing to fight from beginning to end throughout the game. Just seemed like, you know, maybe things got a little too tough for them in this game and maybe the spirits finally broke, but knowing Coach Ford, I'm sure he'll get them back in line.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Like I said, things got away from them early and just kind of snowballed from there. And the last couple of weeks before that game, they had really lowered the, you know, margin of defeat, and they had really rebounded from a couple of blowout losses earlier in the season. Unfortunately, that momentum did not carry into last week.
Going back to Coach Weick now, he's hopeful that his team is peaking at the right time.
Well, I hope. You know, we've got a few weeks left in us, so we need to keep peaking. We're playing with a lot of enthusiasm, you know, and this time of year, like I said, it's a grind. You know, you practice for a long time, you play a lot of games, and this time of year, guys start getting tired and stuff, but these guys are playing with enthusiasm. That's what you got to have this time of year.
Yeah, I'll turn back to you for this, Coach Weiss. Coach Weick just mentioned his team peaking at the right time. Obviously, every coach wants to have that happen. You want your team playing your best football at the end of the year. I guess that's almost why some teams maybe wouldn't want to do what you do, we talked about earlier, and schedule a tough opponent for week 9 of the regular season heading right into the end of the year. You know, you think maybe you would want to get a weaker opponent instead, maybe just, you know, fix some things that you've been hoping to work on for the past few weeks and improve upon.
Well, you can look at that two ways. I think playing a good opponent week 9 it depends on what you're calling peaking. I mean, if you're just going by wins and losses, yeah, I mean, you could schedule some easier teams later in the season. But, you know, I think you could lose a game week 9 and still be peaking. I mean, you might play a team that's better than you, but you might play one of your best games and still come up with a loss. So I don't think it really is all about wins and losses. It's whether how your kids are executing, how you're practicing. Those things are what really matters at that time of the year going into districts. And, you know, Chad and I were talking about it earlier. The last time we played Farmington, we had a really good game with them. I think it ended up being like a 5-point game. We lost, but we still went into districts and were, you know, had a good run through districts. I just think playing a good opponent later in the season is better for you, you know, because sometimes when you play those weaker opponents, you make mistakes and you don't even really correct them because you don't notice them. A lot of times when you lose, you notice everything. And, you know, I think sometimes it makes you better when you lose some games. And hopefully that's the case with us this year. But, you know, I know St. Jen's on a roll right now. I don't think they haven't lost since we've played them. So, and they probably won't until they get, you know, pretty far along in playoffs. So, we'll see. I don't know if we'll see him again, but hopefully we'll have another matchup with him.
And you mentioned that loss at the end of the year. When I was talking with Coach Boss after he fell to you guys, which we'll talk about next, one of the things he harped on his team was just the poor tackling that he thought they had in that game. You know, it was the worst tackling game, I think he said, at least this year, maybe in his 2 years now as head coach of Perryville. And I asked him, you know, if that's kind of one of those where in the back of your mind, at least, it's like, all right, you know what, at least we had this game now, late in the regular season, as opposed to 2-3 weeks later, we have that game and our season's over. You know, is that kind of like it too when you face a tough opponent at the end of the year? You make those mistakes then, so that way you can fix them before the playoffs start when it really would matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you schedule a tougher team. I mean, like I said, I like to schedule tough teams early in the year because you want to try to figure out personnel stuff, and then you try to schedule tougher teams at the end of the year just to see if, you know, you can execute your stuff against good teams, because you can execute stuff against some, you know, subpar teams, and you don't really know if you're good enough, you know. So you got to have good teams throughout your schedule. Now, it's good to have a couple games in your schedule. If you're playing a 9-game schedule, it's good to have a couple games in there where you can try to get some younger kids in and, you know, take it easy on the older kids, get them some maybe a little bit of rest and stuff like that. But in the course of a 9-game season, you want some quality games at the beginning of your schedule. You want some quality games at the end of your schedule. And then you usually have your conference games in the middle. So, you know, It's always the goal when you're putting a schedule together to kind of get it like that.
Getting back to this game now, the Coles Tract and Equipment Web TV game, Coach Ford of Fredericktown, he knows that a lot must change for them before their next game.
Right now, I want to watch film, and I'll go from there. I just don't think our effort was very good, and that's something we've got to take control of.
St. Genevieve, they advance to 5-2 with the win. Fredericktown, meanwhile, falls to 1-6. With the loss. Nick, final thoughts on this game?
It's a great win for St. Jen going into a contest with DeSoto, and then for Fredericktown, obviously a lot to work on. After a couple of good performances, you take a little bit of a step back, so I know Coach Ford is going to be addressing all of those things in the week coming up to this upcoming Friday.
So that is it for the Coles Tractor and Equipment Web TV game. Once again, the final score in this one, 54-17. St. Genevieve knocks off Fredericktown. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll break down the J98 game from last week, where Central topped Perryville 42-7. We'll be joined by head coach Corey Schweiss and a number of his players who may have to wait a little bit for they chow down on the food that they just received right now. It's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington on KTJJ Farmington.
Every branch, every leaf, and every bud forms the ComTree Comprehensive Health Center family tree.
Our doctors, nurses, dentists, therapists, staff, volunteers, patients, and clients form our tree.
We may look different and each life journey is distinct, but all of us are connected, a family.
Call 877-COMTREE or visit us online at comtree.org.
Welcome to our family tree.
Convenience at your fingertips. Whether you have checking accounts, saving accounts, CDs, IRAs, or loans, you can access all of your accounts on Bloomsdale Bank's easy-to-use mobile app. View balances, make transfers, and enjoy many other features the Bloomsdale Bank app has to offer. Visit their website at bloomsdalebank.com or visit any of their five locations in Herculaneum, Crystal City, Bloomsdale, or St. Genevieve. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Josh Harris on the line from Midwest Sports Center, Highway 67 in Farmington. Josh, it's always a great time to shop at Midwest Sports Center, but especially so right now.
With the factory authorized clearance, whether you want on the road, off the road, or on the water, we've got rebates up to $4,000. Stop in and see us, 124 Walker Drive, Farmington.
What's the phone number?
573-756-7975.
That's Josh Harris at Midwest Sports Center in Farmington.
Hi, this is Julie Berghaus with Parkland Health Mart Pharmacy, and I would love to invite you to stop in our store at 806 Valley Creek Drive, next door to Dollar General, and check out what sets us apart. Friendly and helpful staff, free delivery Monday through Friday to your work or home, convenient drive-through window, competitive prices, and top quality services make us the perfect choice for you and your family. Don't wait in line any longer. Let us welcome you as a member of our pharmacy family today. Give us a call at 747-1191 or check us out online at ParklandRx.com.
Hey, it's the Colts Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable on J98 as we broadcast from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington. Head coach Corey Schweiss has been on with us throughout the program so far, and we're joined by a trio of his players now, Will Hopkins, Evan Sidebottom, and Jake Casey, three seniors making their first appearance on the program. So, guys, thanks for taking the time to join us. Time out of your tough Tuesday night to go enjoy some Buffalo wings.
We appreciate you having us.
Unfortunately, with the tough timing, you guys got to put the wings on hold for a little bit right now. Yeah. So, but hey, they're still free at the end of the day, so I guess you really can't complain too much. So, you know, Coach Schweiss and I have been talking for a bit now on the program. I'll turn to you guys now. A tough 0-2 start to the season, but you guys have really locked down and played much better football compared to the first 2 weeks of the year over the last few weeks. You guys are seniors and leaders on the team as well. Three of you are captains on the team. What was the vibe like in the locker room amongst the players from the 0-2 starts compared to the last few weeks of the season?
I think it was almost kind of shocking to some of the guys, you know, that have maybe seen us older guys win these past several years almost undoubtedly. And some of those guys, I think, you know, maybe – just expected too much to come out and win, and I think it was maybe not the best thing, but I think it was good to let them feel what that feels like so they can come back, you know, hungry.
Kind of like a little bit of a wake-up call that, you know, exactly. In the past you've watched it happen and think that maybe, you know, just watching some of the older guys, it's easy to do, but absolutely. Now you're learning that it takes a lot more work.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And so this year, Will, you made a switch from tight end after week two of the season to running back in the backfield as well. How's that gone for you?
I think it's gone pretty smooth. The first few weeks, it kind of maybe took me a while to adjust to the mesh points and stuff of our running plays, but after that, it's been smooth sailing.
Has it been tough kind of waiting for blocks to develop on the offensive line? I think that'd be the toughest thing going from, especially you worked in the preseason a lot heading into the year, as a lot as a slot receiver too, to try and get you on the outside more.
Yeah, I pretty much learned that pretty early on, just kind of playing football all my life. It was difficult, but, you know, once you get that timing, get those reps, you know, you do all right.
Meanwhile, Evan, you had a bit of a tough transition. You went from the backfield to the offensive line, which usually the offensive linemen, they want to do the opposite. They want to go from the line back into the backfield or out at wide receiver or play quarterback. But, you know, you stepped up and took one for the team. Coach Schweiss has had a lot of praise for you in doing that.
Yeah, you know, it's not a bad thing at all up there with all the Hogs, you know, Tanner Friend and some of those other guys. And, you know, we have a good time up there. You know, I think we've rushed the ball pretty well ever since, you know, we got these guys up there. And I think having me and Tanner Friend up there, two senior leaders up there, really helped some of those younger guys, you know, figure it out.
Did it help playing next to Tanner when you made that transition? Because it was a bit of a late move to the offensive line as well, correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a knowledgeable guy when it comes to that stuff. And it definitely helped him helping me out with blocks and stuff, yeah.
And, Coach, I'll ask you this because I know he probably won't answer honestly. How often in practice does he ask for a tackle-eligible play?
Well, he doesn't really
no.
He doesn't really ask for that, but we still have a goal line package in, which is one a three back set that he goes in the backfield. We haven't used it the last couple weeks, but we've got it to go to if we need it. But Evan's done a great job. I mean, it's one of those things we had plenty of guys that could play running back. We just didn't have we didn't feel like we had the guys that we needed to up front, and he's basically filled a gap on our team that we needed filled, and I think it's obviously made us a better football team.
And another tough part with the transition, with how late it was, is, you know, maybe some of the other linemen, they knew all offseason they needed to bulk up and put on weight. You're looking to get in shape to be a running back and run the ball a number of times throughout the game, and you know, you mentioned you got to go up with all the hogs up front on the line now, and guys that are a lot bigger than you are, and you're doing a good job against them, including last week against Perryville. They have some big players.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I was trying to put on weight as much as I could this offseason. Really.
Oh, so you were already trying to bulk up.
Yeah, so it worked out fine for me, really, yeah. Definitely some of those guys are a lot bigger than me, but I can make up for it in strength and speed, so... You know, it's been fun.
Does Coach Schweiss have like a go-to for you guys that maybe you're trying to put on weight before the off season? I was like, this is what you need to be eating if you want to put on weight.
No, I wish it was that easy. I wish he'd give us some kind of magic formula.
Jake doesn't have to worry about that, putting on weight at all, being on the outside as a wide receiver. You just got to keep in shape and be able to run, right?
If I try to put on weight, it's not going to happen, it seems like.
I was reading online a former offensive lineman in the NFL for a number of years, Jeff Schwartz. His brother Mitchell actually still plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. He said his go-to in high school and college for making weight was just buy a whole loaf of bread, make it all in a peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and eat like one every half an hour or something like that when you're not at practice and just hanging out or whatever. He's like, guaranteed you'll make weight if you do that. So maybe that's something you can instill during the offseason.
Well, that was one of the things when I went to a couple places with Will to the colleges we were going to, and that's the one thing I noticed is like those places just feed those kids. I mean, they eat, and then they go lift, and they got stuff in the weight room for them to eat when they're done lifting, and before they lift. I mean, they just eat, and that's all they do is eat, it seems like. But, you know, I know Will really was trying to put on weight, and he couldn't get it on. And after going to some of those places, I'm thinking, dude, if you can't put on weight going to these places, there's something wrong with you.
I mean, forget about, like, the freshman 15, you know. You're going to be wind up losing pounds.
Especially as much as Will likes to eat. Like, I mean,
he's got the double order of wings right there that he's ready to eat.
I just can't put on the weight, man. I try.
So taking a look at this game now, you guys topped Perryville 42-7. The Rebels ran through the Pirates on their senior night this past Friday. The game began with the Rebels taking the opening kickoff. Then on the fourth play from scrimmage, Gage Mannion took it the distance. It's an option, and it's handoff up the middle to Gage Mannion. Gage Mannion spins off a defender, sheds two more arm tackles, takes it up the field to the far side. 10-5 touchdown, Gage Mannion. What a nifty little bit of running from Gage Mannion, spinning off a defender, powering through a pair of arm tackles, and it is a long touchdown run from Gage Mannion. And Gage, I mentioned before, Parkland Health Mart Pharmacy, Play It Forward Athlete of the Week, and you know, after we announced that, when I was talking with you on the phone, Coach, I asked where you get that toughness from, and you didn't have an answer for me. You didn't even know.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things. He's not a very big kid, and he hits the hole hard, and a lot of times the first tackler doesn't get him. He's pretty shifty. But, you know, our offensive line made a hole for him to get through. And matter of fact, on that play, Evan was on the back side of it, and he made a block like 25, 30 yards downfield, which, you know, we kind of stress those guys on the back side. You know, you're the difference between maybe a 5, 10-yard gain and possibly a touchdown on that particular play. He was able to break him, for the 55-yard touchdown.
That's something I noticed with you a couple times throughout the season, Evan, is you're always blocking until the end of the play and sometimes beyond as well, even if it's a little safety all the way down the field. You're going down. You want to hunt him down.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I want to get those guys loose.
Jake, you play safety as well, so I'm sure you know you wouldn't like that if you were playing against Evan and you saw someone his size just steamrolling you then down all 20 yards down the field.
Yeah, safety, I'm used to being untouched. I don't like people coming to block me, especially big linemen like that.
You want to just stay down the field, just monitor the play as it's going on, be there just in case it leaks through the front seven, maybe pick off a pass if it goes down the middle of the field or something like that. You don't want to be getting dirty with an offensive lineman.
For sure.
And so that made it 7-0 Central after the Justin Bridges point after. The Pirates, they'd lock down, or the Rebels would lock down on the Pirates offense as they would for most of the evening. And on the ensuing drive, the Rebels got a touchdown from tight end converted running back Will Hopkins. Going to be an option to the near side. Pitch to Hopkins. Hopkins getting the edge, and he dives for the pylon. Is he in? Yes, he is. Touchdown, Central Rebels. Will Hopkins got the edge, extended the mitts with the ball in it. At the 7-minute mark of the first quarter, it is 13-0 Central Rebels with the extra point coming here. Point after make it 14-0 Central Rebels. And, well, I think that's probably something I'm sure you enjoy about moving from tight end to running back is – you know, as opposed to having to work to get the ball to you and get open and such. You just get it tossed to you and get to do things yourself from there on out.
Yeah, it makes things a little bit easier, yeah.
And then, Jake, you know, you're a wide receiver still on the outside, so you still have to work if you want to get the ball. You know, so maybe, I know a couple times you have an end around. In fact, wasn't there an end around in St. Jen that got called back against you?
Yeah.
That one had to hurt a little bit, didn't it?
Yeah, but we've got to move on.
Yeah, got to move on. I think you do. Do you have a rushing touchdown, another one on the season, though? Or
I thought you had another one.
So if you don't think so, you would know.
We're saving that one. We're going to get him one. Yeah.
Do you have like an end around or something drawn up then?
Well, I mean, we can't give away our secrets.
No. I'm not asking to lay out the whole play.
I will say, though, on Will's touchdown he scored there, Jake made a great block on that. Jake does, you know, it gets overlooked a lot, but as a wide receiver, he does a great job blocking in the running game on those plays, too.
Well, you got a good build for a receiver, too. Not the tallest of guys, but, you know, you got some good weight on you for a wide receiver. I'm sure that certainly helps blocking on the outside against some of those guys that are maybe 160 pounds, a little bit lighter than you.
Oh, yeah.
How much do you preach blocking downfield to your, not just, you know, offensive linemen, but your wide receivers as well?
Probably not enough. I mean, Jake's just natural at it. I mean, he just does a good job at it. I thought some of our other receivers the other night could have done a better job of it. But, you know, the other night we were playing two receivers on the same side of the field a lot, and we were running that way quite a bit. And it was noticeable in our running game when we did do a good job blocking by our receivers. It seemed like our gains were better. So, you know, obviously kudos to the guys up front, but those outside guys, when they block on those plays, it really makes plays better.
Do you try to teach your receivers the stalk blocking?
Yeah, well, you know, stalk blocking is a big thing when you're out there. It's really just getting yourself between the defender and the ball carrier. And then when the defender tries to make a play, if you could just shield him, you do your job as a blocker. So, Jake does a really good job actually getting his hands on him and making good blocks. You know, a lot of times you're worried about that stuff on the outside because you get your hands on people and then they try to get away from you.
It's easy to get a hold.
It's easy to get a hold on the outside. So you got to be real careful out there. It's also a lot easier to get blocks in the back out there. You know, they make a move and then all of a sudden you push them. And so you got to be careful, and he does a great job of that.
So once again, score 14-0 at this point. The Rebels, they got the ball back deep in their own territory, but would fumble and give the Pirates some great field position on the Rebels 10, which they would turn that field position into points.
Snap, it is going to be a handoff to Roden. He powers through into the end zone for the touchdown. James Roden only needed a few inches to go, and he powered through a Central Rebel defender to get in there and cut this to a one-score game with the extra point to come.
Now, James Roden, a lot of teams will exaggerate heights and weights on depth charts and such, on rosters online. They aren't with him. He's a legit 6'4", 260-pound running back. So, Jake, I'm sure when you see a running back like him come into the game, you're happy that you're playing safety where you don't have to get your nose dirty. But, you know, you guys are two of the starting linebackers on the team, Will and Evan. What's going through your mind when you see a running back that size come into the game in a goal line situation?
The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
I love it. Hopefully.
That's one way to think about
it.
Bring it
on.
All right. So, Coach, you got some hard-nosed linebackers then, or at least so they say.
You know, I was kind of wondering. You know, I'm not a very big guy, obviously. I walked out with these guys for the coin toss, and I saw that guy at Crossroads. I was like, holy cow, that's a big dude. I was kind of wondering what these guys were thinking, but obviously they just thought he'd fall harder, I guess.
Yeah, I made the joke. I was like, I had to look over my shoulder to see if Coach Jones was still standing on our sideline or not. I didn't know if he padded up and was out there at the coin toss.
Make sure someone had your back just in case.
Yeah.
So that would cut the lead in half to 14-7. The Rebels, however, they'd get back on track in the next drive as Will Hopkins would score his second touchdown of the night.
And a handoff, and up the middle it goes to Will Hopkins, who's in for the score. Will Hopkins was able to get the edge on his last touchdown. All power on this one as he pushes through the line and gets in.
I talked before about patience with the offensive line, but I guess another tough thing with moving into the backfield for a lot of players could be just knowing to get your pad level low. You know, that's what makes Gage Manion so powerful. We were talking about before, a low man always wins in football. You know, you don't have to, maybe if you're matched up against a corner or a safety, get as low as you would trying to power through in the middle of the offensive line, but you seem to have that pretty well down.
Yeah, it's something that I think the coach is really trying to preach to our running backs, and I just try to do it the best of my ability.
I mean, Coach Schweiss, every year there's a lot of turnover in the running back field, in the backfield. Last year especially, I mean, Tyrese Welch, Jake Glenn, Tanner Smith, you had
Tristan Campbell.
Tristan Campbell out for the year as well. And then this year you move Evan Sidebottom from the backfield to the offensive line. That's almost half a dozen guys that I named right there. And we didn't even mention Jake Bridges, who ran a lot as a quarterback for you guys too. And you got a number of talented running backs again this year. You know, Will is here. Gage, we've been talking about quite a lot. Jeremy Jones playing a lot of backfield for you guys as well this year. You guys just seem to churn out running backs year after year in Park Hills.
Well, that was the thing, you know, and Tyler Murray's playing back there. Son.
Yeah, Tyler Murray, and Trevor Johnson.
We've got a kid, a junior, Trevor Johnson, who's actually a pretty good running back that doesn't even really get to play much on Friday. So that's why we were going to have some good players sitting out, you know, and we were. I knew we were short up front, and that's one of the reasons none of those other guys were really in a position to be able to play the offensive line like Evan was, and it was just that's why the move had to be made. But it was tough from a coaching standpoint to have to do that, because we knew Evan was so valuable in the backfield and a leader back there, and you know, kind of waited his turn, you know, and it was a really tough decision, probably one of the toughest decisions I had to make as a coach ever, and then for him to step up and do it, and then you know, the guys that are doing it, and then Will moving from tight end, because we kind of had the idea of moving Will to running back, but we wanted to keep him at tight end some, and we had some other guys that could play tight end. It's just kind of been this whole year's kind of been a big old puzzle.
I mean, you've been rotating guys all over the place from the beginning of the year. It was a big turning point philosophy-wise from that week two game in MICDS. I recall after the game talking with you, and you wanted to just go back to basics after that, like you did for most of the second half in that MICDS game, just old school Park Hill Central football. Pound the rock up the middle and build from there. You know, pass off of that, pounding it up the middle again. And you guys have had a lot of success doing that as well.
Well, and we really hadn't practiced it a ton before the MICDS game, and we just went to it in the second half and saw how successful we were at it without even really working on it that much. And it just made you think, man, if we just did that the whole game against MICDS, we probably could have won that game. And then, you know, I just feel like we've probably veered away from it too much. But the thing about it was, coming into the season, we have guys like Jake Casey and Jeremy Jones and Braden Scherfus and Dawson Day. We've got all these guys on the outside. Hopkins can play out there. We have all these skill guys, and you think, man, if we just do that, we're not utilizing the talent that we have. But you know, our quarterback situation, we had a young quarterback coming in, and we were having trouble utilizing our weapons, so we had to go back and do what we could do, and I think we found our identity, and I think it's made us a better team. And what the guys on the outside have to realize is their opportunities might not be as often, but when they do get opportunities, they're probably going to be big situations. So you know, they may not get as many catches, but the yards could still be there, you know, because it might, instead of having, you know, 7-8 catches for 100 yards, you might get 3 catches for 100 yards, because the catches that you do get probably have bigger play potential.
Mike Leach, the I guess oddball coach, for lack of a better way of describing it, for Washington State. I don't know if you've ever seen him in any interview, but he's always got some weird way of thinking about something. There's something with him, but he was talking about, you know, offensive balance, and he doesn't like to look at it as, you know, 50% run, 50% pass. He likes to look at it as, you know, all 5 skill position players that are on the field at that time are all contributing to the play or to the victory at the end of the game. So it's not just, oh yeah, we ran the ball half the time and pass the ball the other half. No, we spread out who we got the ball in the hands of and found success by doing that. Is that something you kind of agree with? Because he said that only like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And something that kind of made me look at a balanced offense in a different mindset.
Well, and that was the big thing coming in. It was like, man, how are we going to get the ball in everybody's hands that really needs to touch the ball? Because I felt like we had, you know, 8 or 9 different playmakers on the offense. And it was really – that was really tough trying to figure out a way to get them all the ball. But you know, and it's still something that I think about every week going into game planning and stuff. And, you know, you try to get everybody involved. And sometimes, you know, 1 week somebody might not feel like they're that involved at all. But the next week, depending on matchups, they may be like the man, you know. So they have to understand that as players, that it might not be their week. But, you know, at some point, you know, I know Jake last year in the Lutheran South game had, I don't know, it seemed like he was offensively, he had a ton, and Will had a big season, but you know, they were double covering Will in that Lutheran South game, and he didn't hardly get any touches. So, and then Jake had a bunch of yards in that game, and it just kind of depends on how teams play you and what kind of opens up as the course of the game goes. And you know, hopefully the kids understand that.
And you go back to last week, you know, you guys didn't do a lot of passing in that game against Perryville, but Jake, you were still, as Coach said earlier, you had some big blocks down the field helping on Will Hopkins' touchdown run. So getting back to the game now, 21-7, favoring Central is the score. And after another strong defensive showing, stopping the Pirates in the red zone on downs, the Rebels would begin the drive on their own seven, but would cap off the 93-yard drive with a Gage Mannion touchdown run as he would reach pay dirt for the second time this game.
Handoff. No, it's kept by the quarterback, Corcoran. Corcoran cuts back inside. No, was handed off. That's Gage Mannion who's got it into the end zone. Corcoran was running up the field as if he had it, faked out seemingly everyone, and Gage Mannion was able to escape the mess and take it into the end zone.
Seemingly everyone, including me on that. There was no way I could go back in post-production and edit that to make it sound like I had it right. I was completely fooled on that option play you guys ran there. I think he actually juked someone out without the football in his hands. So,
well, I think if I remember the play, if it's the play I'm thinking of, I think Gage hit it so hard, and Dylan, I think, maybe was going to pull it. But I think Gage clamped on it so hard that I think he just pulled Dylan with him for about 4 yards. And then when Dylan finally got his hands out of there, I think Gage had his momentum going. So he had nothing to do but go forward on that.
By the time I realized Gage had it, he was about two steps away from the end zone, and there was no one else near him. Corcoran, I think he did, like, stick his foot in the ground and try to shake someone out of their shoes. With the option attack, does that get you a little bit nervous since you don't have a true backup quarterback on your roster behind Dylan Corcoran?
A little bit, but, I mean, we've got some guys. I know Justin Bridges could – I mean, he doesn't really play a whole lot of quarterback, but if we had to go in there and run an option game, he does it at the JV level. And then we've got guys that we've been working in and running some quarterback stuff. I mean, Dylan's starting – I think Dylan's starting – doing what we're doing now, Dylan's starting to get a little bit more comfortable. And right now his reads are getting better. He's doing a better job of carrying out fakes. There's a lot of stuff that a quarterback's got to do that we're still not handling snaps as good as I would like. We've had some miscues on the snaps here. The mesh point handoffs has been an issue at some point. We had another one Friday night. So obviously we got to continue to work on it. And this late in the season, hopefully all that stuff would be corrected by now. But it's a work in progress, and it's been a work in progress, seems to be, all season. But hopefully it continues to get better.
You mentioned changing to what you guys used to do in the middle of that week 2 MICDS game and then sticking with it from there. You didn't do much of it beforehand. Was that including the option attack? Did you work a lot of option during the offseason with Corcoran?
We did some, but obviously we were doing a lot of other stuff. We didn't work on it hardly at all before the St. Clair game. And I thought that was one of my biggest faults this summer, was I thought we were preparing for St. Clair too much. And instead of worrying about doing stuff for us, I was thinking about what St. Clair was going to be doing defensively, and we were scheming them. And then St. Clair really didn't even do what we thought they were going to do. So it's kind of a couple weeks wasted. But I feel like our guys are now starting to gel a little bit better.
That's the tough part with the read option and the triple option. It's all repetitions for the quarterback. It's got to become second nature where he doesn't have to think about what the defensive lineman does. Oh, he did this. Now I have to do this. It just has to become one natural thought process for
him. And that's the thing. And he ran it all year last year in JV ball. So he's had a lot of experience. But things happen
at
a lot faster.
At the varsity level,
things happen a lot faster at the varsity level. So it's been a little bit of a work in progress, like I said, and I think we're getting better at it.
So score 28-7 heading into halftime. In the second half, the Pirates would start with the ball and begin to march down the field before the Rebels would force a fumble, getting the ball back. And once again, it was Gage Mannion reaching the end zone.
Handoff up the middle to Gage Mannion. Gage Mannion spins off one defender, spins off another, and into the end zone for the score.
And Mannion wasn't done there as he would score for a fourth time in the contest.
Gage Mannion and Tyler Murray, the backs in the backfield. Snap to Corcoran. Hand off to Gage Mannion, who cuts through to the end zone. Touchdown, Gage Mannion, his fourth of the evening.
That would bring us to a final score of 42-7, Central topping Perryville. Some stats on this game. Gage had 16 carries, 162 yards, and four scores. Will Hopkins, who's here, he had 9 carries, 108 yards, and two scores. For Perryville, Drew Hotop led the team in rushing, 15 carries, 107 yards. And beyond that, from Drew Hotop, no one really stood out stat-wise on the Perryville side. That's something I didn't really notice, before that Perryville game when you mentioned it to me, Coach. Your defense has been really good this year, locking down on a lot of opponents, especially, if you include week two, even then, the offense put you guys in some bad positions, but otherwise a good defensive performance against a tough MICDS team.
Yeah, it's like I said, I think defensively we've been outstanding. I think the MICDS game, I think if our offense doesn't turn the ball over, I mean, we had a pick six in that game, and then I think two of their scores, we turned the ball over inside, you know, I mean, they basically didn't have hardly anywhere to go. So they only moved the ball for one of their touchdowns, really. And then, you know, since then, you know, the four conference games that we played, we've only given up three touchdowns, and the St. Jen touchdown and the Perryville touchdown, we turned it over inside the 10. And, you know, Potosi's really the only team that had the drive to get a touchdown, and that was really one big play on that. Jake ended up running a kid down, but they ended up moving it down. But we had a penalty on that one on a 4th and 4. You know, you take away a few things, a couple turnovers and a penalty and stuff, and we may not have given up a touchdown since week 2. So I feel really good about our defense. I think our defensive coaches, Coach Casey and Coach Jones, do an outstanding job. Film work, film study, getting our kids in the right positions. I know the Perryville, you know, they had 104 yards, but really two of those, it was really just two carries. And our secondary were able to catch them from behind. And it was just really fit issues. You know, we didn't fit stuff right. And when we were doing some stunts, our, you know, it's one of those things our linebackers need to widen out and play it a little different. But, you know, we learn from those things, and that's good that it happens because we can learn from it now. And in Monday film session, we can learn from it. I think we're better because of it. And I think our defense will just get better from here.
When you guys are watching film on the other team, is that a before school thing, after school, before practice, or after practice thing?
We usually watch film before practice on the Monday after a game. We don't come in on Saturdays. We give our kids the weekends off, and we do it on Monday after school before we go out for our walkthrough on Monday. And you know, the implementation of the, you know, the next week's scouting report or whatever. So. And that's kind of how we do it.
And Coach mentioned it, not just right now, but after the game as well, Jake, about the defensive backs doing a good job of, you know, being literally the safety valve for the defense if it does get past the front seven. A couple times in that Perryville game as well, you and Jeremy Jones did a great job of tracking down, you know, players that got through and preventing, you know, turning a what would have been a touchdown run into a long gain instead. And you held Perryville to just one touchdown in that game because of that.
Yeah, you know, back there we're not having to make tackles right up at the line, and we have to be able to use our skills, which is our speed, and be able to help our defense out in front to prevent them from busting long runs.
And you know, it wasn't on a run per se, but a great effort play a few weeks ago against St. Jen by Braden Scherfus to punch that football out from behind. That was really a turning point in that game as well, because at that point, if that goes and they hit the extra points, tied up at 14-14. Instead, you guys score 14 more unanswered.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, as a secondary player, you know, it's one of those things like a quarterback on offense. If you make a mistake as a quarterback, everyone sees it. If you make a mistake in a secondary, everyone sees it, you know. You make a mistake on the defensive line or the offensive line or linebacker or running back, a lot of times, you know, it's not a touchdown or it's not, you know, people might see it, but it's not as big of an issue. When you screw up at those positions, like because you're the last line of defense or you're the guy making all the decisions, a lot of times those mistakes are magnified, and they should be. I mean, I always think the offensive line, defensive line is the most important part of a football team, and I think any football coach or anybody that knows football will tell you that. But at the same time, those other positions, you know, they're just in the – and that's what everybody sees because that's where the ball is. You know, they're always watching where the ball's at. So, you know, I think that the casual fan a lot of times doesn't notice the lineman, but I think anyone that knows a game of football knows that's where it all starts.
That's it. If there's a mistake, the casual fan may not notice it, but Evan, I'm sure you know that the coaches will notice it every single time, and they'll bring it up in that Monday film session.
Oh, for sure, yep.
Who's the worst coach to be chewed out by on the team?
That's
a question for all three of you. Don't just look at Evan. Don't throw him under the bus.
I don't know. Coach Jones get in you sometimes.
Coach Jones?
Yeah, for sure.
Jake?
I've never been chewed out by Coach Swice, but I've seen him chew out people. And I wouldn't want to be chewed out by Coach Swice.
Now, your dad is a coach on the team. Has he ever chewed you out?
He's not really that hard on me here. He was hard on me more at Potosi
when he was the head coach, yeah.
But not here, he's not too bad.
Did he chew you out then back at Potosi ever?
Not really, but he's gotten on to me pretty hard.
You tell him, like, don't tell me how to live my life, Dad, or something like that, and just storm off? And then, Will, what about you? Who's the toughest one?
Oh, man, you're going to get me in trouble.
I guess since Coach Weiss is sitting right across from me, I'll say
you guys are lying. Everybody, we are all scared of Coach Jones. I promise you.
Yeah, I'm the most scared of Coach Jones.
Would you say that? Who would you say is the scariest of all the coaches? Than Coach Jones?
Well, I think they're all scared of Coach Jones just because he's bigger than them. I mean, they're not scared of me.
Yeah. I feel like Coach Jones probably won't listen to this, so I'm just gonna say Coach Weiss.
It goes online afterwards, so word does get to Coach Jones. It's been nice knowing you guys. So once again, final score in this one. It is the Central Rebels knocking off the Perryville Pirates by a final of 42-7. Coach, final thoughts on this victory?
No, I mean, I just think it was a game. I think it was one of our best games. I think we executed well. Aside from the two turnovers that we had, well, actually one turnover, I guess, but the other fumble snap that cost us a couple yards. But other than those couple mistakes that we made, I thought, from an offensive line standpoint, a defensive line standpoint, I thought we controlled the line of scrimmage, and then from there, the rest of our team picked up and played well.
Coach, thanks a lot. We'll ask you to hang out a little bit to help us preview your next game as you take on Dexter on the road. For the players, you guys can finally go enjoy the food now. I think I see Will drooling a little bit, so I'll let him go. We were talking about bulking up before. You guys can go eat. We'll have you guys on later on, though, to defend your picks at the NFL Pick'em.
Sweet.
Will Hopkins, Evan Sidebottom, Jake Casey, and Coach Weiss joining us on the Colts Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable. Back after this with the play of the weekend. We'll preview Week 8.
Are you or a loved one facing the thought of having to move into a nursing home because you're no longer able to care for yourself or your loved one at home? Consult with Community In-Home Services in St. Genevieve before you do anything. They provide in-home care to seniors and the disabled to keep them in the comfort and familiarity of their own home. So give them a call at 573-883-8997 to set up an appointment or visit them at 1010 St. Genevieve Drive. Community In-Home Services in St. Genevieve, serving you and yours since 2002.
It's time you try Little Caesars and Herculaneum's Extra Most Bestest Pepperoni Pizza for just $6.55. It's wall-to-wall with delicious pepperoni. Or how about their Ultimate Supreme for just $9.99? Also, check out their great-tasting wings, crazy bread, cinnamon crazy bites, and so much more. And don't forget Little Caesars' mouth-watering dipping sauces. That's Little Caesars just off 555 at the Herculaneum exit. And be sure and use the Little Caesars app so you can pick up your order when you walk in.
For generations, Massey Ferguson has been more than just a name in the field. Like Fliggs Equipment, it is a name that has been trusted and withstood the test of time. Hi, I'm Clarissa Nagger. Jason and I would like to invite you to stop by either of the Fliggs locations and test drive for yourself the brand new Massey Ferguson tractors on the lot. From compact to full-size machines that can do work on your biggest plantation, Fliggs Equipment, proud to be your full-line Massey Ferguson dealer. Fliggs Equipment, let our family serve your family. St. Genevieve, Ledington, and online at Fliggs.com. For generations, Massey Ferguson has been more than just a name in the field. Like Fliggs Equipment, it is a name that has been trusted and withstood the test of time. Hi, I'm Clarissa Nagger. Jason and I would like to invite you to stop by either of the Fliggs locations and test drive for yourself the brand new Massey Ferguson tractors on the lot. From compact to full-size machines that can do work on your biggest plantation, Fliggs Equipment, proud to be your full-line Massey Ferguson dealer. Fliggs Equipment, let our family serve your family. St. Genevieve, Ledington, and online at Fliggs.com.
It's the Colts Tractor Equipment Football Roundtable on a J98 Boot. Let's take a look at the play of the week from Week 7.
Launches up. Oh. Shut it.
What a play.
Into the end zone for the score. 44-yard touchdown completion. The Clayton Sutton, the Sutton on top.
So there you have it, the game-winning touchdown from the KJF game. Matt Greenwood getting his third play of the week on the season. Chad's got two, and Andy's got two as well. Nick and I still searching for our first one, but hard to pick against a game-winning touchdown, especially a historic one for the DeSoto Dragons.
I thank you for the selection, Sean. And
I don't pick when I call games. I leave it
completely out. Oh, that's right. Andy, I thank you. And all the credit has to go to Clayton Sutton and Briar Fisher and Coach Johnson for making the call possible.
other ones throughout the season. Royce Harris, punt return touchdown was week one. Seth Lounsbury, long touchdown for Sekman in week two. Sizemore touchdown run for Hillsborough in week three. Grant Staffin had a pick six for St. Jen in week four. Andrew Graves outrunning the opposition for a touchdown in week five. And North County's Jalen Reed had that 99-yard fumble return for a touchdown in week six for the play of the game. Is the Clayton Snudden from Briar Fisher touchdown joining them for week seven. Now we turn our attention to this coming Friday night and week eight throughout the listening area. We'll see Potosi at North County on J98. Andy, you just saw North County 2 weeks ago. The Potosi Trojans have, you know, they've had some solid games this year, but they've also had some games that, you know, they haven't looked like the team maybe that played against the Central Rebels. Same deal for the North County Raiders. They had that great win against the Hillsborough Hawks, Cape Central week one. Then they've had some other games that you're not really sure where this team stacks up against the rest of the other teams in their district.
Well, you're right. Both teams have had their inconsistencies over the year. I think North County's offense is really starting to click. I mean, 30 points at least in each of the last few weeks. And now they're facing a primarily running attack Potosi team. Well, they just faced a running team in Hillsborough 2 weeks ago. Now there are some differences between those two attacks, but, you know, if you're North County, you have to feel good about your defense going forward against that Potosi run. For Potosi, you're looking to really ride your defense as well. They've been able to shut down some weapons this year, and since North County has them all over the field, they'll have to key in on quite a few guys, but it should be a very interesting matchup as to who can get the better hand on either of those sides of the ball.
Chad, you've got Lutheran North at Farmington on KREI. Lutheran North has, what was it, over half a dozen players that are already know where they have number of Division One looks. Even one got some looks from Alabama.
They've got the athletes. You know, they have the Johnnies and the Joes. Do they have the X's and the O's? You know, maybe that might be the formula for Farmington. Do they have the right system to beat them? Farmington is capable of playing ball control. They are capable of turning teams over. But Lutheran North is going to be a tough challenge. Lutheran North 4-3, but that doesn't really tell you what they are. Their losses to out of Chicago Nazareth Academy, Homewood Flossmore, Class 8 team that played in the playoffs last year, and an Ohio Power in Cincinnati LaSalle. Once they've gotten back to Missouri, they've outscored their opponents 184-30. And those aren't against Class 2 teams. You know, those are against some other teams. So it's going to be a tough one, but you know, Farmington, they took a really nice step forward last week. If they can improve this week, they can make a game out of it and you know, late at home, right away. I think it's going to be a pretty good ball game.
For Coach Kruby, how do you get film on a team like that? You know, because normally coaches will trade with other coaches to get film, but, like, how are you trading with a team from Chicago, from Cincinnati? They don't want anything that Farmington has.
Well, most of them are on that huddle program. Mm-hmm. Probably 80.
What is that, the full game or 80, just
highlights? Yeah, it's okay. Everything. And it's probably 80 to 90% of programs. And I don't know if Lutheran North is, but I know most programs are. So, and you know, outside of that, you hustle around and call this coach, and do you know him? And so I don't know how they got the film on, but I know they did.
Matt, on KGF, it is homecoming for Festus, where St. Francis Borgia, they're going to be taking on the Festus Tigers. What do you know about them?
Well, I know St. Francis Borgia just from looking at the stats. Well, I wouldn't say I know this, but from looking at the offensive numbers, they're not as high as you might expect from a 6-1 team at this point in the season. So you look at the defensive numbers, and that's where you're kind of like, okay, I can see why the offensive numbers are the way they are. This team uses their defense to win ball games. They have 4 defensive touchdowns this year, 2 interception returns or 3 interception returns and 1 fumble return. So from the stats, St. Francis Borgia is a team that uses their defense to win football games. Festus, their defense is their offense, essentially. They run. They've got Austin Anderson, Chalmer Brickhouse, Jack Robinson. Those three guys are very good about carrying the football. You throw in a little speed mixer and Rashawn Hyde, a guy that can kind of change the pace of the offense for them. So it's going to be interesting to see how Festus moves the ball on a defense that is clearly, based on the stats, really, really formidable.
Nick, on the Coles Tractor and Equipment Web TV game, you've got the Battle of the Dragons, DeSoto visiting St. Genevieve. You saw St. Gen last week. They're coming off a strong showing against Fredericktown, but in DeSoto, they're coming off a strong showing as well, beating their rival Hillsborough for the first time in a number of years.
You stole my line. I was going to say Battle of the Dragons, but it's fine. St. Jen, yeah, they're coming off of a really good win against Fredericktown. They didn't really have to sweat much in that game. We'll see if that, you know, affects this upcoming Friday, as DeSoto certainly did have to sweat a little bit in that last contest that they had. I think for St. Jen, you know, I talked to Andy about this once. He said, find me a coach that won't call homecoming a trap game. And this is going to be homecoming for St. Jen, so we'll see if that affects anything at all. There will certainly be some distractions. Will they be able to work through them? We'll see.
And Central is at Dexter. Coach Schweiss rejoining us again. And this is a team in Dexter last year that really surprised a lot of people with how well they did, from what I recall. You guys beat them. I believe it was your senior night last year. What do you know about the 2018 version of the Bearcats, though?
Well, the thing I remember about that Dexter was how big and physical they were. They were a big physical football team. They got a new coach. Pixley's back there. He'd been there when they were pretty successful, and he came back from Kennett, came back to Dexter to be the AD, and now he's the coach again. And you know, he's a well-respected coach in the area, and they're gonna be good. I mean, they're probably not the same Dexter as they had, you know, a decade ago when they were really good, but they're gonna be they've got some really tough players. And it's going to be a formidable opponent for us.
Wasn't it like a pistol option attack they ran last year, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, game?
Yeah, and they probably should have been under center because I think looking at the district game that they lost to Salem in the districts, and it really, I mean, they snapped the ball over the quarterback's head like 20 times, it seemed like. So, but anyway, that's one of the things. They do a lot of different things. I mean, but really what they want to do is they want to run right at you. And we're going to have to stop that. And we saw a little bit of that with Perryville last week. And it's going to be real similar. Big physical team like Perryville was. And hopefully our defense can step up to the challenge.
Coach, we thank you for joining us. We'll give you a pick'em sheet as well. We'll see how you do stacking up against the rest of the coaches as well. The players will be joining us a little bit later on for their picks. We'll announce your picks on the air as well. Other scores or other games coming up this Friday night. Fox is at Seckman. St. Pius visits Crystal City. St. Vincent will host Grandview. Valley Catholic takes on Herculaneum at home. Donovan's at Fredericktown. Hillsborough visits Jackson. Chaffee is at Jefferson. Northwest, they'll host Oakville. Cuba is hosting Windsor. And on a Saturday game, Perryville travels down to Portageville to take on the Bulldogs. So we'll take a bit of a break, and when we return, we'll talk a little Missouri Tigers, and after that, do some NFL pick'em as well. It's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable from Buffalo Wild Wings in Farmington on J98.
Whatever your educational goals are, you can achieve them at Jefferson College. With caring faculty, convenient locations, and award-winning academic programs, your future is Jefferson College's focus. To learn more, call 636-797-3000 or visit jeffco.edu for a complete list of degrees and programs. Enroll now.
For higher education, for higher expectations, Jefferson College, Jefferson College.
Hi, this is Brad Smith at Lucas Smith Chrysler Center. Lucas Smith Chrysler is more than just your local Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep dealer. We sell and service to the entire Jefferson County area. So while you're listening to this sports broadcast, no matter if it's the Tigers, the Hornets, the Blue Jays, the Lancers, the Dragons, or the Hawks, remember, we are and we support the entire Jefferson County area and its sports teams. We are Lucas Smith Chrysler Center off Highway A in Festus, your home of the No Bull Deal.
Home of the No Bull Deal, Lucas Smith Chrysler.
Hi, this is Chris from Patsy's Furniture. We have enjoyed meeting you and want you to help celebrate our 17th anniversary with us. Enjoy food, friendship, sign up for some giveaways. We have 2 years no interest and 90 days same as cash financing available. Just our way of saying thank you for being great customers and friends.
You'll love to shop at Patsy's.
Patsy's Furniture in Park Hills.
With Coldwell Banker Holsey Real Estate, every detail matters in the home selling process.
Make the first move. Besides curb appeal and painting your front door, it's time to declutter your home from closets to kitchen cabinets. For more ideas to help sell your home in today's market, text me, Wanda Saharsky with Coldwell Banker Halsey Real Estate, 573-631-9494.
Contact Coldwell Banker Holsey Real Estate at coldwellbankerholsey.com and follow us on Facebook.
Our summer is ending, and on comes the Friday Night Lights. Yes, it's that time of year again for high school football. Hi, this is John Cozine, and for four generations spanning more than 100 years, our funeral home family has supported the Farmington Knights. And for most of the past 20 years, I've been photographing the Knights for the benefit of the players and their fans. You can see these photos online by going to our website at Cozine Memorial Chapel and highlighting the Community News tab. Or go directly to the Farmington Missourian on the internet. Either way, you can see the Knights as they play another exciting season.
It's the Coles Tractor and Equipment Football Roundtable on J98 The Boot. Back again, Sean Malone along with the Regional Radio Sports crew. And I think we're going to have Will Hopkins for the players on headset representing them. And Coach Schweiss hanging out as well to defend his picks. But before we get to that, we got to talk a little Missouri Tigers football. The Missouri Tigers, they lost a heartbreaker on the road Saturday to the South Carolina Gamecocks by a final score of 37-35 on regional radio. Mizzou led by 9 points at halftime, and then they gave up the lead in the third quarter. And after an hour and a half lightning delay, the Tigers took the lead with a 57-yard field goal from Tucker McCann. But time winding down, the Gamecocks found a late field goal of their own to secure the 37-35 victory afterwards. Tigers head coach Barry Odom says this loss will leave a mark.
Devastated for my guys to not have enough throughout the course and stretch of the game to end up winning one like that. Thought we made, you know, a lot of big time plays, you know, to hang around the course of four quarters and the delays and all that. You know, both sides had to play in it and do it, and they ended up making more plays than we did down the stretch.
A tough loss for the Missouri Tigers. Andy, maybe this be a case a little bit of overconfidence after, well, like we were saying of 2 weeks ago against that Georgia game. Yeah, they lost, but they looked pretty good. They seemed to hang with Georgia except for a few big plays against them. So maybe just a little too much confidence heading into that South Carolina game and maybe looking a little bit ahead to Alabama as well, a combination of different things?
Sure. I mean,
maybe.
the thing is, listen, and you've got the hat, and I know he's over there just trolling, but this is a bad loss. It's a bad one. It's one that they should have had. They're more talented than South Carolina. It's just a fact. And they had a backup quarterback, South Carolina did, and Mizzou wasn't ready for it. And, you know, the defense has now given up 37 points at least in the last three games that they've played. You've got a defensive-minded coach. So, I mean, you're weighing these things, and you just don't know when Barry Odom's going to have a signature win. We're still looking for it.
Or when he's going to just establish, like you said, he's a defensive coach, establish that defense. Because you'll see that with, you know, like Brian Kelly, when he came into Notre Dame coming from Cincinnati, he established the defense and the offensive line. He built that team the way he built Cincinnati. We haven't seen that from Mizzou. They've been an offensive team first with Drew Locke throwing all over the place.
Well, the thing that I've looked at, and I'm actually interested to see, Coach, what you might think about this, and I'm sorry if I'm springing something on you. You don't have to, you know, answer this.
I'm good with that stuff.
but when you're, you know, when you're coming up as a coach, you know, a lot of times in the professional or college ranks, you're usually coaching one side of the ball and coming up that way, and then you get to the head coaching position. Is there an expectation that, you know, a team is going to get an advantage on that side of the ball from wherever the coach's background is from?
I think just watching the game and watching coaches, I think you usually expect that to be the case. I mean, I know, just following the NFL teams like I do, usually the defensive-minded coaches have good defenses and the offensive-minded coaches have good offenses. But then you get those special coaches that seem to be able to do both. And I think it's one of those things where, I know in the situation I'm at Central is, like when we hired P.J. Jones, when we hired P.J. Jones, it was just like, okay, this guy knows more about defense than I do.
Right.
I'm going to let him coach defense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I do. I'd be silly to, like, not do that. I mean, the guy obviously knows what he's doing. And I think sometimes those guys, when they get the head coaching job, if they feel good about their assistants, which that's part of being a head coach is hiring good assistants with you,
you got to hire the right guys. And I think, Mizzou's got a new offensive coordinator this year, and I was concerned, you know, because, you know, when you have a quarterback as good as Drew Locke and you get a new coordinator, you don't know how he's going to be able to handle that. But offensively, they haven't missed a beat. And I'm like you. I think defensively, I'm disappointed with them just because Barry Odom is a defensive guy, you know, and that's and Mizzou was a good defensive team, you know, when they were sharing the titles down there in the SEC. When they first went to the SEC, I thought it was going to be bad, and they were, you know, SEC East, they were doing all right. And it was defense, really, that they could hang their hat on, and they had a lot of defensive guys go to pro. And it was disappointing watching that game the other day. When that tight end went down the middle of the field at the end of that game, yeah. I was just like, I mean, you watch the scheme, and it was like there was three receivers on that side of the ball, and they only had two guys covering them. It was like, what are they doing, you know? And, you know, I'm just watching as a, you know, Peon high school coach, and I'm thinking, what are they doing, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
And I've seen them the last couple of years, you know, since Barry Odom took over as head coach. Now, he didn't start at Mizzou as head coach. He came over from Memphis as a D coordinator. He became Mizzou's D coordinator for a season, and the defense was phenomenal. They had a spectacular year in 2015. Then he becomes head coach partly because of how good the defense was, and he's already gone through two defensive coordinators. So that side of the ball just seems to be in flux at the moment. You're not having a set system. You know, you don't know if Barry Odom has his hands on it or if, you know, the guys that he's hired on defensive coordinator. It just seems a little bit off that a coach like Barry Odom, who has coached very good defenses in the past, just can't get it figured out when he becomes head coach.
And again, the offense just being there makes it weird. And for the SEC as a conference as a whole, that's a conference that's known for tough defenses, mm-hmm. a lot of run-heavy teams as well. And then you got Mizzou sitting there. They seem that there are some games it looks like they can't defend anyone, and they're slinging the ball all over the place with Drew Locke too. It's almost right. The anti-SEC of the SEC.
And important to reemphasize that South Carolina was using a backup quarterback who had never made a start in his career. That's tough.
He's going to be wearing an Alabama hat next week. I guarantee you. He's going
to
be doing it.
There was a big play in that game too when the running back from Mizzou went down the sideline and they gave him a touchdown, but they reviewed it and they said he stepped out of bounds. At
the 10 and a half, yeah.
Yeah,
I was listening to that part.
And Mizzou went backwards from there. And,
yep.
You know, that was a huge play in that game. I think that was probably the turning point. And, you know, I watched it like five times on the replay, and I didn't think there was enough evidence to overturn the call, but it went against Mizzou. And, you know, I'm obviously a Mizzou fan, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say about it, though, I mean, Drew Locke obviously, you know, deserves better, I think. You know, because he played really well. He had some mistakes. There was, I mean, that lob from that one pass, that one interception that was returned for the touchdown, sure. Another guy that deserved more in this game was Tucker McCann. I mean, five field goals, one of them a 57-yarder to give them the lead late. That is the longest kick that a college kicker has had all year, 57 yards. This season, it belongs to Tucker McCann. He deserved better too.
And for it to come at the time it came,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
I mean, with the pressure.
After the big long delay as well. I mean, you're just thinking about it.
So Mizzou and South Carolina, they're both now 3-2 overall, and the Tigers, they fall to 0-2 in the SEC. This coming Saturday, they'll travel to Tuscaloosa, taking on top-ranked Alabama and the Crimson Tide. Coverage begins at 4:00 Saturday afternoon on AM 800 KREI and AM 1400 K Jeff. And now we turn to NFL Pick'em as we take a look at the standings the way they sit. Chad and I are still tied for first place on the season so far at 61.5%, getting 48 out of the 78 picks right on the season so far. The coaches, they're in third right now, so Coach Weiss, you got to keep that up. They're at 53%. Matt is now up to fourth. He's at 52.5%. Right behind him, Nick and the players are tied at 52%. 0.17%. On Twitter, it is 51.28%. You can follow us on Twitter at Mimo Info Sports. And Andy, who's been flipping a coin the last 2 weeks, has got himself back up to 50% flipping the coin. In fact, he got 8 out of 15 right this past week as well.
That's
so
right.
A good week for
take it out
Andy.
Of my hands.
Exactly. Put it in Fate's hand instead.
Aren't you flipping the coin with your hands, though?
No, but the coin is deciding. The coin is leaving his hand. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Exactly.
So now got to flip somehow.
Now we turn to week 6 of the season. Thursday night, it is the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles visiting my New York Giants. And Chad's got the Eagles in this one. I'm going to go with the Giants upsetting Philly in this one. Just, I think, a perfect storm of it's a divisional game. The Giants had a lot of bad calls go against them last week in Carolina. The offense finally looked good, so I think the Giants, they're going to be mad.
They're going to want to beat up on the Eagles, who finally won their first Super Bowl, and they're at home. So I think just a mix of all that gives the Giants a win against Philly at home on Thursday night. Matt, who you got?
I don't even know how to decide this match. So I'm going to take the team with a better record. So I'm going Philly. But that's, yeah. I mean, these two teams.
Well, better by a game. That's the thing. It's not like Philly's looked great so far.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like maybe expectation-wise, the Giants maybe are right where they were expected to be. But Philadelphia is nowhere near where we expected them to be. And even with Nick Foles, you know, playing early on and Wentz, you know, coming back from an injury and all that good stuff. But I'll take Philly.
Andy?
I kind of like that pick there, Matt. Yeah, Philadelphia.
What is the coin like, though? That's the question.
Yeah, they like the Giants. I hate that pick. I think that's terrible. Come on.
Will, you're representing your two teammates on mic in Evan Sidebottom and Jake Casey. The three of you work together. What have you got for this one Thursday night? I'm sorry?
We're going Philly.
You're going Philadelphia in this one. Coach, which way are you leaning?
Well, it's 15-0. I've already got Mark.
There we go.
Right,
so what's the correct pick then?
The Eagles will win that game.
They will win. Nick, which way are you going?
I'm going to go with Philly. Both teams need a win, but I like Philly more.
All right. And now we turn to Matt once again. We'll start you off with Atlanta hosting Tampa Bay. Jameis Winston back under center for the Buccaneers. Can he pick up where Fitzmagic left off?
No.
No? So, all right, you got Atlanta. Okay. Andy, which way is the coin going?
Atlanta.
Will?
We got Atlanta.
You got Atlanta. Coach?
Atlanta will win.
Atlanta?
I'll go with Atlanta, too.
And Atlanta for Nick as well.
That's an awfully loud blender, by the way.
Yeah. That's like...
In case y'all are wondering what's that whole buzzing noise is going on behind
good
us.
In there.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, they visit the Cincinnati Bengals. Chad's got the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've got Cincinnati at home. They've looked solid this year so far. Not great, but solid. So give me Cincinnati. Matt, which way are you going?
Well, there's a reason why Chad went Pittsburgh. He loves Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's a Steelers fan.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be foolish not to pick them. Cincinnati is who I'm going, though. So I guess he is kind of foolish.
So, yeah. Andy. Good.
That did not count. I did not catch it.
Come on, man.
This is dead air on radio.
It's like a softball.
Off of it. Yeah, there you go. That's good. Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh for the coin. Will, which way are you guys going?
We're going Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Still curtain.
Coach, what is it going to be? Now, what do you predict?
It's going to be Cincinnati.
You know, I joked all last year that the problem isn't that I'm wrong. It's that I'm right. The NFL is just wrong a certain amount of the time.
Yeah.
Nick?
At a certain point, the Bengals are doing too good. It's not going to last. Give me Pittsburgh.
That's usually week one of the postseason when it finally becomes too good for the Cincinnati Bengals. So Nick thinks that can happen a little bit earlier on in the season. He's got Pittsburgh. Chad has Pittsburgh, and as I mentioned, I've got Cincinnati. Now the L.A. Chargers are visiting the Cleveland Browns. Chad's got the L.A. Chargers. I'm going opposite Chad once again, and I've got the Cleveland Browns in this one. You know, they've gotten a couple ugly losses. They've gotten a couple ugly wins, so maybe they'll win one clean at home finally, so give me the Cleveland Browns.
No, it's going to be ugly, too, but I'll take Cleveland.
Wow. Okay. Andy, which way is the coin going?
Cleveland.
I saw one rotation on that, dude. That's not a flip.
Okay, fine. All right.
There we go. That's better.
Oh, wow. You changed this there. That's now the Chargers.
Now it's officially the Chargers. Okay. Well, which way are you
going? Shake and bake.
We're
going Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland Browns. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I'm riding Baker Mayfield, too, man. I think he's got a little bit of the it factor going on.
Nick?
Man, there are way too many people picking Cleveland. I am nervous, but I'm going to stick with my pick. I'll go with the Browns.
Yeah, stick with the Cleveland Browns. Now we got a game overseas. It's still going to be a noon kickoff hour time, but at Wembley Stadium, it is Seattle versus Oakland. Chad's got the Oakland Raiders. I've got the Seattle Seahawks in this one. Matt, which way are you going?
Wembley Stadium, you say?
Yes.
I'm very familiar with Wembley Stadium. Let's see. Home of Manchester United, currently home of the Tottenham Hotspur soccer, but anyway, nobody cares. Seattle or Oakland.
Are they really changing the time so that it's 1 Eastern now? Did they change?
They've done that before. They've done that where it's still I think they used to do that when they first went out there, actually. It was originally like a noon Central, 1 o'clock Eastern kickoff.
Wow. Okay, Seattle.
That was a good flip this time, Andy. Good job.
It was?
Yeah. Will, which way are you guys
going? I saw three rotations.
You got Seattle.
Yep.
Coach?
Well, Drew Brees is on a bye this week, and Derek Carr is my backup.
so in fantasy.
I got to play Derek Carr, so Oakland's got to win this game.
You don't sound thrilled when you say you got to play Derek Carr.
Well, I mean, I like Drew Brees.
It's hard not to like him, especially after that performance he had last night to get the record all-time passing leader in the NFL now.
Yeah.
Nick, which way are you leaning?
So I picked Seattle originally. Then I whited it out because I was using a pen, and then I picked Oakland. And then I just remembered that it's not actually a home game for Oakland.
No.
But I'm just going to stick with it and go with the Raiders.
You stick with Oakland. The way it works, if you want to change it again, it's got to be made on air. So if you change it tomorrow, it doesn't matter. It's
going
to be the Oakland Raiders. Now we've got the Chicago Bears taking on the Miami Dolphins. I really like Chicago this year. I think their defense still isn't getting enough love as a unit, let alone Khalil Mack.
Oh, I'm giving them love with my fantasy team, that's for sure.
Give me Chicago. Give Chad Chicago.
Matt. Yeah, Chicago. I hate to say it as a Packers fan, but golly, this defense is so good. And if it wasn't for that, for losing that second half lead against the Packers in Week One, this team would be even, you know, would be that front runner for first place in the NFC North.
If Aaron Rodgers didn't come back, who knows?
Oh, I know. It's been
bad.
Here
we go. Let's see, does the coin like Khalil Mack?
No. Miami.
Ooh. Will?
I'm voting for a true and proud Chicago Bears fan right here, Evan Seibold.
Evan's a Bears fan? Okay.
We're going to go Chicago. And I guess the better question would be how many strip sacks is Khalil Mack going to have this week?
How many is he going to have by the end of the season?
That's what I'm saying.
He's having just an absolutely – he's really just trying to rub it in Oakland Raiders fans' face right now for the franchise not locking him back up. But, Evan, you're a Chicago Bears fan. Is that before or after the Rams moved away? Way before. Okay, ever since he was a little kid.
Still got
a Chicago Bears fan, is that why?
Yes,
okay.
He's still got the Urlacher fathead in his room.
Oh, man. Yeah. Urlacher is a great player for a long time. So, Coach Weiss,
I hate that guy.
We'll turn to you now.
Wasn't Urlacher number 54?
Yeah.
That is his number,
Wearing 54 when he moved up?
There we go.
All right, so I like
it. It's all making sense now.
Coach, which way are you going in this one? Or which way is it going to go?
Well, I took Miami, but, I mean, Evan's almost persuading me to take Chicago now. But I'm going to stick with Miami.
You're going to stick with Miami. Yeah. Okay. Nick?
Fins up.
Fins
Miami.
Up. Miami Dolphins for Nick Lewis. Now we turn to Arizona at Minnesota. I've got Minnesota in this one. Chad's got Minnesota. Is anyone picking the Arizona Cardinals in this one?
No. Not I.
Well, let's see.
Oh, yep.
Oh, yeah, we got to figure out if the coin is.
Is Josh Allen starting this one?
Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen is starting.
He's
going to start.
He's thinking about it now. The coin says Minnesota.
He's going to go. I was going to say, you got to consult with your teammates, because if you wind up being wrong on
Oh, no, we're going Minnesota all the way.
Minnesota all the way.
That's a lot.
Coach? Nick, all the way
around Minnesota.
Now the New York Jets, they're taking on the Indianapolis Colts at home. And you know, Sam Darnold, he looked a lot better last week against the tough Denver Bronco defense. So Chad's got the Jets. I've got Indianapolis because of Andrew Luck. I trust him more than Sam Darnold.
Well, wasn't the last time the Jets kind of like surprised people with a victory? They lost badly the very next week. Like they destroyed Detroit.
Heading into Week Two.
Yeah, they destroyed Detroit and then lost. I can't remember who it was. So, and I'm with you. I trust Luck more than the Jets as a whole team. So I'll go Colts.
Andy and the coin. Which way are you guys
hopefully
going?
Hopefully, Luck is on Luck's side here. It is not.
It is
Jets.
Not. Jets for the coin. Will.
We're going Jets.
The Jets as well. All right. Coach?
Yeah, I think the Colts are going to win, but I'm picking the Jets.
But you're picking the Jets.
Yes, because you can't go 15-0 unless you pick somebody that
you don't know is going to win. I mean, yeah, exactly.
Watch you go 15-0 now because of that
pick.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's the whole premise of this right here, Sean. That's the whole premise of this.
Nick?
I'm in a personal disagreement, or shall I say a fight, with the Jets right now. Last week, Isaiah Crowell had 4 carries for 0 yards. This week, he had like 16 for 230. I have him on my fantasy team. Guess which week I started him. Guess which week I benched him. Anyway, I'm still going with the Jets.
So the Jets for Nick as well, despite Isaiah Crowell and him having a bit of a dispute right now. Now Washington is going to be hosting Carolina. Chad's got Washington. I've got Carolina. Matt, who you got?
Carolina, toss-up.
Carolina?
Yeah, it sure is a toss-up, isn't it? George Washington says, he's going against Washington this time. Carolina.
Yeah, this was a hard one for us. We're going Carolina.
I feel like it's two teams that just tough to figure out this season so far. Like, you don't really know if they're good or if they're bad. They're kind of like that in-the-middle team. Coach Weiss, which way are you leaning?
I got to go with Carolina. I got McCaffrey on my fantasy team.
Ooh, he's killing it for me in my big money league now. He's leading me to first place. Nick?
I picked Washington against the Saints. Didn't go too well. I'm going to pick Washington again.
You're going to pick Washington Redskins. Again. Nick is a bit of a slow learner here. Houston.
Ooh, nice.
Hosting Buffalo now. Buffalo has been weird to figure out this season, too. They play at, they've upset two teams that no one thought they would win against. The Titans, who had one loss entering that game. The Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
On the road, too. That game was in Minnesota. I don't care. I'm still taking the Houston Texans over them in this one, as is Chad.
The defense is back for the Texans, and I think they're just going to keep getting better and better from here on out. Buffalo's not a team that really poses a lot of threats. They don't have an Ezekiel Elliott running the football, so I'll take the Houston Texans.
But so long as Deshaun Watson doesn't get killed by Chris O'Brien, what is he doing?
I really would not have been surprised if Monday he woke up and couldn't breathe. He just took so many hits, ribs, chest.
He got beat up bad.
Yeah, the official injury report said the chest, so it's everywhere, though, I'm sure.
Andy? Which way is the coin going in this one?
Wow.
Uh-oh.
Neither of these two teams are good, but coin says Buffalo.
Buffalo, okay.
Well, nope. I just couldn't pick against my cousin, DeAndre Hopkins. So,
wow, we're going there you go.
I see the similarities.
Yeah, very I told my kids that he was your brother. That's
spin moves.
I'm going Houston, too.
You going Houston? Nick?
Texans.
Texans. All right. So now we've got the L.A. Rams at the Denver Broncos. Chad's got the L.A. Rams. I've got the L.A. Rams. I think they're the best team in football so far this season through 5 weeks. Matt?
They are, and the Jets ruined Denver. I don't know how, but they did. So I'll take the Rams.
Mm. Andy, which way is the coin going?
Coin is like the Rams so far. Not this week. Denver.
Denver will be the first team that knocks them off, apparently. Yeah. Will, before we get to your pick, we already know that Evan is a Bears fan through and through. Were you a Rams fan? And Jake, were you a Rams fan as well? Yes?
I'm wanting to know if it's too late. Can I go back and be a Rams fan?
Yes,
you may get ostracized by the former St. Louis Rams fans, but I'm sure they're more than – I mean, I don't think they're filling up the stadium still, so I'm sure they're welcoming anyone who's willing to be a fan. Jake, what about – are you looking to jump back on the bandwagon as well? You thought you already did. All right, so who are you picking in this one?
Oh, we're picking Rams.
Rams. Go Rams all the way. Coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's hard.
Were you a Rams fan?
Oh, yeah. Back in 1999, 2000, I was loving life. I was having a good time.
They've got, like, the greatest show on turf 2.0 now.
It is. I was telling my kids, actually, that these guys remind me a lot of those Rams teams, you know, with Falk and Gurley kind of similar.
Right.
And then all the receiving threats on the outside. And
a lot of speed in those three guys, too.
And some of those balls that Goff threw a couple weeks ago, it reminded me how Kurt Warner used to throw those dimes in there. So they're fun to watch, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking Rams. Definitely taking Rams.
Definitely taking them. Now, are you a former Rams fan, or are you jumping back on the bandwagon like
some
of your
players? Well, I'm old enough. I'm actually a Cardinal fan.
Oh, you're still a Cardinals fan.
Well, and then when the Rams came and they had that success in St. Louis, and I got to go up to a lot of those games, and I ended up becoming a Rams fan. But when the Rams played the Cardinals, it was like I was kind of torn. But I like both the Rams and the Cardinals.
So who do you root for then when they play now?
Right now, I root for the Rams just because they're better. But when the Cardinals are
better, I see how it is.
Told on yourself, Coach.
So Coach has the Rams over the Denver Broncos. Nick?
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles Rams. Now the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're taking on the Dallas Cowboys. Chad's got the Jaguars bouncing back. I've got the Jaguars bouncing back. I think this is just a bad matchup for Dallas. They're looking for answers on offense. I don't think they're going to find them this week against the Jacksonville defense. Matt?
Jacksonville.
Is everybody taking Jacksonville? You guys are all taking them?
I'm taking Dallas, actually.
Oh, you are? Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Really? Mm-hmm.
See if the coin's with you. It is. Look at that.
All right, so I want to know your reasoning. Why are you taking Dallas then, Nick?
I don't really.
The coin said so.
I don't really have a reason. I have no prepared remarks.
That's
I'm just going with Dallas.
This is all about, baby.
That's why I just said Jacksonville and moved on.
Sometimes you just go with your gut.
That's what it is. That's all it is.
Now it is Baltimore at Tennessee. Baltimore, I was saying before, they had a great start to the season. I think it was more of a fluke than anything else. So give me the Ravens. Give Chad the Ravens. Matt?
Let's see. Bad offenses meet great defenses. We're going tie.
So this is going to be your tie pick.
This is going to be my tie for the week.
Matt,
Baltimore, Tennessee.
After ties early on in the season,
six
Matt
final.
Pick one every week. And I've still said if he ever gets a tie correct, I'm going to give him 3 points for it.
There we go.
I was just going to ask,
you
get bonus points for that?
Come on now. He's going to pick one at least per week all season. If he ever gets another one, or if he gets one right in the first place, he's getting 3 points for it. Andy, which way is the coin
going?
Coin
says Baltimore.
Baltimore. Will?
Thank you, Sean.
We're going Tennessee for the boys.
Tennessee for the boys. Will Compton is all on that for the boys. Him and Taylor Lewan, the left tackle over the team, are all on that now.
Yeah.
Coach, which way are you going?
I think I'm going to take Baltimore.
Baltimore and Nick?
Ravens.
Ravens, all right. Now we have the primetime games and a bit of the new guard taking on the old guard. Kansas City visiting New England.
Wow. What
Chad has his Kansas City Chiefs. That's his other favorite team besides the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've got New England. I'm not doubting Tom Brady and Bill Belichick at home. So, Matt, which way are you going?
What a matchup, right, guys? I mean, who would have thought 5-0 Chiefs, 3-2 Patriots and Sunday Night Football. Golly, it's hard to go against Mahomes, isn't it? And you have him on your fantasy team, Sean, so I'm surprised you're going Patriots there. But I'll take the red, white, and blue.
Mm. Chad, to provide some context
with
that.
Will the quarter
go
the red, white, and blue route as well? No, Kansas City.
And Chad, to provide some context with that fantasy, I got him in waivers, actually, because someone cut him before week one of the season. And Chad, who's a Chiefs fan, after seeing his week one performance, told me he was going to pick him up after I already put in a waiver claim. I didn't say a word because I knew I was higher in the waiver order than him.
Right.
So he's still not happy with me to this day about picking up Patrick Mahomes. Will, which
we're
way are you
Kansas
going?
City. And I have Mahomes on my fantasy
team. And Sean, you have Tom Brady on your bench.
I got
so
Tom
it's
Brady.
Like you got both of them.
I've been alternating based on the matchup the past few weeks between Tom Brady and
so who are you going
Mahomes
with then?
I think right now I'm leaning towards Tom Brady just because it's a better matchup. We'll see as we get closer.
I'm curious about that.
I'm still not sold on the Kansas City pass defense. Coach, which way are you going in this one?
I'm going with the Patriots at home. I think I like the Chiefs. I really like the Chiefs a lot. I like their offensive play calling. I like the way they do things. But I don't know. Patriots just seem to win these kind of games.
It's tough to pick against Belichick and Brady at home in a prime time.
Didn't Kansas City win?
I was up.
Oh,
you stole my
year?
Line. You stole it.
Oh, I'm hurt.
First game of the year.
You stole my line.
Not as hurt as Andy is that Mizzou lost to South Carolina.
Yeah, I had another. Well, I had you kind of just screwed something else up I was going to do, but that's fine. Anyways, I was going to say, does anyone remember what happened last year? The Chiefs went into Foxborough week one, won. They're going to do it again, Kansas City.
All right. Now we have Monday night. It is Matt's Green Bay Packers as they host the San Francisco 49ers. This was shaping up to be a good game before the season began when Jimmy Garoppolo went out for the season. So I think it's pretty much Green Bay around the board. Is anyone picking the 49ers in this game?
Who knows?
Silence all the way around. Let's see what the coin's picking.
Green Bay.
You know,
Green Bay. Even the coin knows better than
I think
that.
I would pick the 49ers, but their backup quarterback is no Michael Scarnecchia, so I'm just going to stay away from that, Andy.
KU people have some football.
You know, that's very true. KU football is not good at all.
Anything over there.
It's tough to pick C.J. Beathard over Aaron Rodgers, especially in Lambeau. So that wraps it up for week 6 of NFL Pick'em. So thank you guys, the Central Rebels, for coming out. We certainly appreciate it. Will Hopkins, Evan Sidebottom, Jake Casey, the players. And Coach Schweiss, thanks for coming out as well. Always appreciate it.
No problem. I have to give a shout-out to Yammy. He was sitting over here eating, one of my buds from St. Jen. I told him I'd say his name on the radio on the drive home. And he had his little boy with him, little Yammy. So when you're sitting in the car on the way home, you said you could be listening to this. You better have a smile on your face.
See, you can get away with doing shout-outs, but as anyone who works in radio knows, if someone asks you for a shout-out, you don't give it to them because all of a sudden everyone starts calling, oh, can you shout me out too? Hey, I don't even know you, man. Why am I going to shout you out? People are just like pigeons when it comes to
that. Yeah, we're never on the radio, so
exactly.
I can do it.
So now we got to deal with that. Thanks.
Kurtzy also texted me and said he was in his combine listening to this a while ago, so I'll shout one out to him too.
All right, Coach, thanks a lot. We always appreciate it. Best of luck against Dexter this week. That is head coach Corey Schweiss, our guest on the program. We'd like to thank the rest of the regional radio sports crew, Chad Speaker, the program director, Matt Greenwood, the KGF sports director, as well as Andy Humphrey and Nick Lewis. Matt, you had something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I spoke to Steve Boyd. He's the Fox girls golf head coach. They made it to the state tournament for the first time in school history. They started their girls golf program back in the early 90s. So I'll have that conversation with Steve Boyd tomorrow on my KGF sports talk program beginning at 4:15.
Nice. Some games that we're going to be covering up in week 8 throughout the listening area. It is Potosi at North County on J98. Lutheran North visits Farmington on KREI. St. Francis Borgia, they'll visit Festus for the Tigers' homecoming game on KJF. And on your Coles Tractor and Equipment Web TV game, it is DeSoto at St. Jed. Once again, on behalf of the regional radio sports crew and for Derek back in the studio, I'm Sean Malone. Thank you for making us a part of your Tuesday evening. If you missed any of the program, you can find it online later tonight. MIMOinfo.com. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday night, folks.